Blog Talk Radio.
I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
This is the Bulldozer Matt Tremont, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
How can you be proud of these things? Deanna Duvall has a lot of things to be proud of, Dean.
Well, I see 2 things that she should be proud of from here.
And what are they, Dean?
I'd rather not discuss that right now.
All right, fair enough.
Hi, I'm Bink Bottom Trouser, the ring announcer from Sideshow Pro Wrestling, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
I'm Mormon, you know? But nonetheless, Matt and I, it's a weird New Jersey Mormonish that thing, though. You know, V, anytime I get on the line with you guys, it's going to be interesting things they say. Nonetheless.
Hey, guys, this is Salamander Jones, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio!
He thinks he's a model. Oh, dear God. Maybe he's a model for the blind, okay? That's what he is.
Good evening and welcome to another exciting edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am your host, Double D, and with me, as always, is Dan, the above-average comedian. Dan, the man law.
Hey, happy Halloween, everybody.
That was what you needed to get out.
Oh, no. Oh, you wanted me to say it now? I was just going to say, I just wanted to cut in and say in 3 weeks we're going to have a 20-minute intro.
Oh, will you stop it?
I just wanted your reaction.
I keep it to 2 minutes. Thank you very much.
Oh, 2 minutes. Holy. We should play some. Never mind.
Whatever.
There we go.
You can find me at Folsom County. You can find Dan at DanLaw83. Joining us later will be none other than Omega Squad. And you can find him where, Dan?
Omega Squad.
That's right. On Twitter. Tonight's a packed show, Dan.
Oh, jeez. I'm liking these 9 o'clock start times. It's like the late days of Nitro where they would have an hour of bullcrap, only we have entertainment.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
We're expanded tonight. We do that when we overbook, I guess is the best word.
I'm not the booker here. It's been abundantly clear I'm not the booker.
Well, irregardless who books, who doesn't, you can listen.
Hand me a canola.
You can subscribe on iTunes, Dan. Just search for Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. We are proudly part of the BradyHicks.com. We're there right now.
Hi, everybody. And you know what? There was quite a few new listeners and followers, this week. So, hi. Hi, everybody. Hi. Welcome to this ride we call Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
I don't want to burst your bubble, but, Dan, I believe that had more to do with the pay-per-view that WWE put on.
Whatever.
But now they're part of the family.
I was going to say, they're stuck now.
You can follow that Twitter at HIAC Talk Radio.
There's a pay-per-view this week?
Yes, there was. We're going to talk about it, Dan. I hope you did your
What was that pay-per-view called?
Hell in a Cell.
I think those bastards ripped us off.
Again.
Vince, I swear to God I'm going to sue you.
And like the Facebook at Cell in a Hell, that's on Facebook.
Which is probably going to be our name soon.
Could be. Now, come on. What was that?
I said, what do we got tonight, Dean?
I'll tell you. We got Steve Corino, the king of old school. He'll be coming up in a little bit.
Story career, years. And he was fairly young when it started. So
we have the Mac Daddy Ron Starr. He's an independent veteran.
Hell yeah.
involved heavily with DWF right now, and of course, the leader of the Empire.
Conspicuous this weekend.
You could say that. Sometimes he lets the troops go.
I want to know what happened this Saturday because, you know, everything's going well, and then you tell me you had something to do with certain people not being there, and I want answers, quite frankly.
Perhaps the next edition of the Scoop Slam Dan will have the answers you're seeking.
Okay. You sneaky, sneaky son of a biscuit maker.
I am. Also, we will be joined by Jaden from NWA Dog. There's a huge show coming up. There will be a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
And get this, a buddy, well, is he a buddy of ours?
Who?
Who's going to be fighting in that match for the NWA?
Yeah, Greek God Papadon, he's also joining
buddy,
us.
I was going to say, is he our buddy or are we his bitch?
A buddy, Dan.
Buddy, okay. Because, you know. I don't think he has any friends, really.
So he'll be joining us as well, and Jake Bishop should be calling in any minute now. If he doesn't, I'm just going to go to the highlight package of what happened this weekend. And, of course, it was PG-13 Expanded, Dan. You were there? What were your thoughts?
I'm sorry. I didn't film it. There's no film. I videotaped it. Film just sounds more professional. Quite honestly, can I say on air what I said to everybody in the back? Or will I get in trouble?
I would prefer you keep it clean, yes.
Oh, no, not dirty. Just what I said. The content was quite frankly, I thought it was the best indie show I've seen in months.
There you go.
And I'm not, you know, a presentation, the wrestling matches, the quality, the people, and how loud the audience was. And I guess technical, it was the opening night of Proving Grounds, and it was technical sellout.
Yeah. All the chairs that were, what's the word I'm looking for?
Set up?
Yeah, all the chairs that were set up were sold out, so.
And let me just say this, some people tried to sneak in and tried not to pay, you got caught.
Well, we had a crack security staff, that's for sure.
Yes, the crack security staff that we're going to plug the scoops. Say one more time, I want answers about Empire.
Well, irregardless...
You made enemies, sir.
Irregardless, no, Blackie and I are still on good terms.
Okay. Considering he was one of the ones you didn't let in.
That's neither here nor there, Dan. I can't wait any longer. It's a packed show, so we're going to get right to those highlights. It's an 11-minute clip of some of the commentary. Go ahead. What?
No, I'm going to say, so I'll leave. No, but honestly, folks, you missed a heck of a show, and the next show, well, we'll talk about that later.
So, sorry, Jake.
You're fired.
We'll have to
pick this up. Hi.
And here were the highlights. Some sounds of the evening.
I mean, where is he from?
Well, the New Jersey Department of Corrections.
Oh, will you stop it? He's not from there.
Sure he is.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Jake Owen had the tights.
He doesn't have tights. He's wearing tracksuits.
He was obviously holding on to the jumpsuit
win. Stop it.
This is a travesty.
That was a clean win. A clean win by Jake Owen, the final one.
I'm going to file a petition with the board.
I love it. Why are you filing any petitions?
This is an outrage. How dare this man come into New Moon Rising Wrestling?
Here's the bigger story, dude. Aside from Kikawa, who just won this match, you've got Crazy Ivan at ringside. And Crazy Ivan, I do not want to be anywhere near the Sandman. Where are the straitjackets? Where are the people to take him away?
Oh, he's coming this way, Hick.
Huh? He was talking about you.
Here he comes, Hick.
What is he doing? You keep him away from me, Dean. I know you're friends with him.
It looks like they're going to go for their Fusion Destroyer, their finishing maneuver.
What is going on here? That, like I said, that is the Dark Angel Slayer. Why did he do that?
Don Warren, he's upset. The Dark Angel Slayer throwing water in his face.
How disrespectful
is he? Now what's going on here? This is...
Oh no. This isn't fair, Dean.
This is the Untouchable Dog.
Oh.
That's what this is.
No.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that's a
we got a couple on the outside there. But more importantly, in the ring,
He didn't even let Damian Dragon get involved.
The champion. The champions. Jake Bishop coming from the back. The champions have retained the title. There's Justin America.
I don't like think Cruz is in the house. I don't like this. I don't like this kid. This is
Stringing Society is here, lady. Get on your feet.
No.
Get on your feet.
Will you sit down, Dean? Sit down.
Showing their whole strength.
Show some decorum, Dean. You're not in the Mean Society. You're not a wrestler. You deserve to get beat up like somebody in the Mean Society.
That was
you
wonderful.
Need to sit down.
You see the master strategy. Look at this. We have a new member of the Mean Society. And it is the Dark Angel Slayer.
UGDS should be disgusted right now. They had that match.
More importantly, we have another member. What are they doing? What, they're grabbing chairs?
They need to take charge here.
My goodness. Wow. What just happened here?
I'm disgusted. Did you have something to do with this?
I did not.
You better not have. If I find out that you did, Dean.
But let's go back and relive that untouchable dog from the top rope. Boom, hit it on Matt Saigon. Got the three count.
What a hell of a move. I think Fusion DS are going to be back, Dean. This isn't the last.
Well, certainly not. They do deserve a rematch, I would think, based on their performance in this match. However, they didn't get the job done here tonight. The fans trying to rally to no avail for Sienna Duvall.
And Cherry Lane sends Sienna into the ropes. Attempt. That was a scary moment, team.
Is she all right?
I don't know.
Okay,
Sienna. Okay, Sienna just got dropped on her head. And sometimes that happens in wrestling teams. As they say, it's not ballet. You know, I hope that she's okay. I hope that she's okay. She was attempting
a submission maneuver of some type, it looks like.
This
looks like the D-Con here. She calls this the D-Con because it's the rat killer. And it's all over with the D-Con.
I call it, Dean.
The lights are out here. I'm
what's
not
going
sure.
On?
Don Warren is at ringside. He's okay. Now what's going on?
This is no longer a DQ match. This is a regular ball match. No more DQ.
This is an odd ruling. I've never seen it.
Well, hold on a second here, because Jake Bishop, he has a rope and he has the tights.
We have a new champion. That's a free count.
That was the tights again.
X-Dog Jake Bishop has started. He has taken the title back home.
We have a new World Heavyweight Champion in Jake Bishop.
And here comes the Mean Society.
I'm not happy about this. And Don Warren
shares the Mean Society.
Here's what happened, guys. Here's what happened, guys. We had the lights go out. They come back on. Jake Bishop is down. Martinez said he didn't hit him with the chair. Don Warren changes the rules midstream. And all Bishop does is he uses that as a distraction to get the roll up, holding the tights. New champion. New champion.
Who's the new champion? But we have a bigger story right here. Luis the Punisher Martinez, seemingly very upset with Don Warren.
I understand Don Warren's concerns, but he should not have done that. You don't do that.
I've never seen it go the opposite way. I've seen it go from a regular match to a DQ. Okay. No DQ.
First, at number one, the former United States champion, the Wrestler, Robert Knight.
It's your buddy, Dean, and he's number one. How you feeling?
This has been doing for weeks. All I gotta say is that Robert Knight has been in intensive training. He is ready for this.
for the past week he has been in isolation. If anyone has ever been more ready for a match, I don't know who it is. No! No! How's it looking now, Dean? No! American Roughneck, no one's behind this. I knew about it. Roughneck just told me before we came back from the break. I'm so excited because American Roughneck is behind this. He gets his hands on Robert Knight. Finally! I wish he'd get his hands on you. Months and months, these two have been talking on radio. Months and months, they've been talking on Facebook, the social media network. And finally, Robert Knight won't shut him up for good. Whoever's going to shut the other one up, the bottom line is, no more talking, Dean. It's going
they
down.
Going right at it.
Look at this. Roughneck in the corner. Send him to the opposite side of Robert Knight. He is flopping around.
But after months and months, as we were saying, after months and months, look at Roughneck here.
So 13 men, one U.S. title, and it slips through my hands. That's okay. That's all right. Because last time I checked, Dean, you might call me a dummy, but that's 33% of the competition that I eliminated. That's 33% of the competition that I destroyed. They got thrown out of the ring at my hands. So I didn't win the U.S. title? That's all right. I got my sights on bigger things now. Stay tuned, because Tank Tone's coming to whoop some ass.
Listen, Dean, obviously you saw the American travesty that just happened. Robert Knight, Justin America, working together as a team. You could easily say, as Robert coined, we were the greatest American heroes in that ring. Until that idiot, Tank Tolan, decided to pull me out of the ring illegally. Illegally pulled me out of the ring! Which is why, next month, I'm challenging him in the ring. I'm calling him out, and I'm going to put the boots to him.
Robert Knight to his feet. What is this? Thank you, Roughneck. What is this? Thank you, Roughneck. The Roughneck. It's about time someone did that to him. Tyrino now to his feet.
It looks like he's from the bottom.
Oh! We did it! We did it, Dean! Tyrino, the new!
Wrap it up, Hicks, go for it!
The new United States champion!
The new United States champion, Tyrino!
We heard you, Cliff Light! I want to say it!
Brady Hicks is talking, go ahead, buddy!
The new
this
moon
outrage
rising wrestling United States champion.
This is an outrage. I got this.
Oh, Roughneck is taunting you, Dean.
Get out of here.
You didn't deserve it anyway.
The match is over.
You didn't even think that phony could win. You didn't think that Robert Knight had a chance.
This moment in time, I hope I can forget one day.
If we're going to encapsulate a moment, I'm looking at American Roughneck out here. He goes to pick up his elbow pad. He grimaces in pain, bending over to get it. He picks it up, but he has to hold on to his wrist. That's a snapshot. That's PG-13.
I can't believe it. The board of directors rips off the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, one more time. I won PG-13 twice, and I'm still not the United States champion. Well, I'll tell you what, Tyrino hasn't heard the end of the Knight Rider, but I got unfinished business with the American Roughneck. I'm taking care of him first.
So, Dan, that was Moments in Time from...
Exciting.
Yes, a very exciting card. While we were playing that, the new heavyweight champion of New Moon Rising Wrestling did call in. We're going to get right to him.
Hey,
after this.
Jeff, he can do it whenever he wants.
I want it all. and I need it right now. Give it to me, baby, I don't care how.
All right, welcome to the show, the new moon rising heavyweight champion of the world. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
I'm doing good. You know, just doing 80 down the freeway, heading to Atlantic City, about to go spend some newfound fortune with this title I got. And hopefully the police won't catch me, but I'm screaming out the window at them as I'm somebody.
All right, so this past Saturday, you and Luis, the Punisher Martinez, started out, it was a DQ match. All of a sudden, lights go out. Don Warren changes the course of the match.
I don't know what that was about because, you know, it was real dangerous to have the lights off. And, you know, whoever was controlling, you know, I could have lost an eye in that battle there.
That's for sure. Now, what's coming up ahead? I mean, well, before we get there, how do you feel bringing that title back home? Not only to yourself, but to the Mii Society.
The title never left. I was always the champion. The first champion, the only champion. That's the way it is, that's the way it was, and that's the way it's going to be. As far as how I feel great. I feel like a big burden's been left off my shoulders. I get now, like I said, go spend this newfound fortune that comes with the title. And, yeah, drinks on the house.
Now, aren't you a little nervous that you've possibly enraged the Punisher a little bit further than you should have?
If the Punisher could run 81 miles an hour, he could catch me. But right now, like I said, I'm doing 80.
There you go. So
until the time he can speed like that, then I holler.
Well, what's next for you? What's coming up? November 17th is, of course, the next event. Do you know anything yet as far as who you're facing, who you're defending that title against?
Yeah, as soon as I got back there, Don Warren placed somebody, one of his guards or whatever they had there at the light switch, and told them if anybody touched those light switches within the next month, then they're fired. And, you know, he mentioned something about me facing the Punisher again, but, you know, the way I look at it, I walked out of there, so I'll walk out of the next one.
Now, I do have one serious question. I mean, it's been talked about for months. It finally happened. New Moon Rising came back, and as far as I'm concerned, it was a big success. How do you feel now that's come and gone and you move on to the next event?
So, first of all, I'd like to say thanks to the Mii Society for brightening up the whole arena. And, you know, we basically carried the show on our backs. Without us, I think Monster Factory hopefuls would have been better off there during that thing.
Oh, Jesus. Why did I ask?
Well, Dan, you did ask, but...
Go ahead.
I'm going to let you get back to getting to Atlantic City. Hopefully where you're going hasn't been affected too badly by the storm, so have a great time. Spend those riches.
All right, hold on. Here come a cop.
Patrick, who came?
All right, Dean, holler at everybody because he just turned on his lights.
Oh,
I'll holler at y'all.
No, boy. Jake, I'll see you soon.
See you later, Jake. I had to ask.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
I was asking, seriously, I wanted to know. I didn't want to know that.
Well, speaking of big, big, big events, Dan.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
This Friday night in Clayton, New Jersey, there will be a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion crowned. The former champion, Adam Pearce, because the Seven Levels of Hate was not sanctioned, the seventh match of the Seven Levels of Hate between Pearce and Colt Cabana was not sanctioned.
Okay.
So Colt Cabana wins. Adam Pearce gave up the title. We have a vacant title.
Right.
The NWA board came together and said, hey, we got an event in Clayton. We're going to crown a new champion. For more on that, we're going to bring on Jaden now. Now, this is an assistant to the promoter of NWA Dog. Jaden, how are you doing tonight?
Good, sir. How are you this lovely, cold October Halloween evening?
I am doing great now. I brought you on. I want to talk about this big show. It's Wrath of the Champions. That's number one. But also it became a benefit show because of some tragedy in the town where this is being held. Care to go into that?
Yes. Unfortunately, there was some tragedy now in the town. Young Autumn Pasquale was murdered in Lake New Jersey. And the show was already going to happen. It was planned for actually a benefit for the high school. I know that the doctor talked to the athletic director and the vice principal, and they decided they're going to make it a benefit all the way through for the Pasquale Fund, the Autumn Pasquale Fund, to try to help her family with the final cost. I don't want to go into numbers, but I know how expensive the funeral was. I pulled a little number, and it was it's horrible. And you know that poor family was not expecting to have to put that kind of money out for that kind of situation. Nobody expects to lose their child, especially 12 years old. And it's just an absolute tragedy. The family is having lots of struggles. And we decided between NWA Dog and the school, we really decided to try to help this family out. It's also there to help the whole town recover, not just from the horrible tragedy, but they just need to recover from everything. And luckily, the town and all around us have been pretty safe with the came to the hurricane. We did not seem that we did not see any kind of major damage around this area, unlike the shore. But there's just so much recovery needs to happen between that, and especially with the Pasquale family, that this is something for the fans to come to turn their brain off, just to enjoy some great wrestling and help a great cause, because, like I said, the family needs all the help they can get. We want to do everything we can to make sure we do that.
Now, in the main event that night, we have an 8-man elimination match. It's going to be tagging in rules, that sort of thing. Two men in at a time. Once you're eliminated, you're gone. You're out.
Yes.
Now, the 8 competitors, very briefly, just go into who the 8 are.
Well, we'll start at the youngest of the participants and probably the lightest, Lance Anoa'i. He is the son of Samu. He is the grandson of Apa the Wild Samoan. He's the nephew of Manu. He's the cousin of Rikishi, the cousin of Yokozuna. That family has a huge lineage going back for championships, among championships, and beyond wrestling history. Lance Anoa'i, I'll say it now, he's the most talented Samoan wrestler out there today, and he's one of the most charismatic. Yes, he may be one of the smaller competitors, but you can't measure somebody's heart. The man is just amazing inside that ring. He's going to show a dynamic in that ring of high-flying and unorthodox maneuvering that most of the other wrestlers have never seen before. I think he may be somebody you need to keep an eye out for just because of his pedigree and his lineage. Above him is the Fat Daddy Biggie Biggs. He's the biggest and the heaviest wrestler in the tournament and the match. He has once wrestled for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. He almost won the NWA World Tag Team Championship with Steve Corino, but the referees changed the decision. The only man to hold both the NWA New Jersey and the NWA New York Championship. He also is the number one contender to the NWA Dog Championship and the number one contender to the NWA Coastal Championship. So the man knows how to get it done. He's very entertaining. He's kind of like a modern-day Bam Bam Bigelow with a little Dusty Rhodes thrown in. Very entertaining and very talented, very deceptively agile for such a big man. He's going to be somebody that, if you're not going to be careful, he may big bang his way to the NWA Dog Championship. And then one of your absolute favorites, the man who decides that he is a god among men and everybody else are peasants, that is Papa Don. I know he's held the ECWA Championship. The man has held the NWA Cyberspace Championship. The man won the Super 8. He is very talented. Especially if you listen to him, he's the most talented wrestler ever.
Yeah.
he's almost as talented as he is arrogant, which should say a lot. A lot of people actually pick him as the dark horse to win the championship. He has the talent, he has the skills, and he may be the first Greek-born NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
That's historic in its own right.
Right above that is Anthony Nese, former TNA Impact superstar. The man has wrestled the great Muda. That's all I really need to say to tell you how good the guy is. He went toe-to-toe with the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the great Muda. But he's also wrestled for Dragon Gate, Ring of Honor, Evolve, CZW, and he's making his NWA debut. He was originally supposed to be getting an NWA Dog Championship match. Looks like he was elevated up. I think he's going to try his best to take advantage of this opportunity and become your next champion. The next wrestler is perfect example why you don't judge a book by its cover. He's, if you look at his cover, it's kind of tattered, kind of weird. He kind of looks like some kind of hippie Viking, Ferengi monstrosity.
Ferengi.
But luckily, when you open up this book, it is the most riveting novel and most exciting adventure you have ever written. There's no epic poem and there's no horror movie or anything talking about just how exciting and naturally gifted this guy is. Now, he calls himself the Gift, and he is just that. Jason Kincaid is the NWA Smoky Mountain champion. He is also one of the lighter competitors in the match, but don't underestimate him. He's gone toe-to-toe with the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion Adam Pearce. He has gone toe-to-toe with the North American champion. He's gone toe-to-toe with much bigger wrestlers. And with his most impressive accomplishment, I think, is he took a Davey Richards to a time limit draw. Davey Richards, former Ring of Honor champion, and kind of like the reincarnation, even though he's not really passed away, of the Dynamite Kid. But, man, was that match amazing. I beg you to go out and look for it on YouTube. Jason the Gift Kincaid is a real deal. Like I said, don't judge a book by his cover. The man can do it in the ring, and he has all the ability to be the next champion. The next person in the line is Damian Wayne, the NWA Dog Champion. I could speak forever about how amazing Damian Wayne is. Everybody asks me, how do I describe Damian Wayne? He's one-third Stone Cold Steve Austin, one-third Tully Blanchard, and one-third Jeff Hardy without the drugs.
Oh. So he two-thirds wrestle. Jeff Hardy.
Well, no, two-thirds. Jeff Hardy off the drugs is actually one and one-third of Jeff Hardy.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But Damian Wayne is amazing. He's held the NWA Dog Championship for 550 days. I have to check my math on that one. But for 550 days, he's defended it in 5 different states in 36 times against some of the top competition. He's been there with Marty Jannetty, Jerry Lane, Julio De Niro. He's got a defense coming up, if he's not already World Heavyweight Champion by then, against C.W. Anderson. He is amazing. Oh. Right now, I guarantee Damian Wayne is worth the price of admission alone. The guy is just one of extreme talents, and I think the favorite to win the championship. Above him is the Canadian Lion, Lance Erickson. Canadian Lion's an old-school throwback wrestler. He's a little heavier. He's not the sports entertainer, but, man, the guy is tough. There's no example about how tough the man is. He and Damian Wayne have gone toe-to-toe, and they left in a bloody pulp. And in a 2-out-of-3 falls match, Damian Wayne broke Lance Erickson's ribs in the first fall, and he came back to go to a no contest in that 2-out-of-3 falls match. That was almost 40 minutes from that point, and he continued with broken ribs. That kind of heart and determination may be the factor one that's going to determine the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And finally on the list is the Dark Child, Chance Prophet, the currently NWA Ring Warriors Bahamas champion. He is undefeated in New Jersey. He's a former NWA Dog champion. He's a former 2-time NWA National champion. He is just absolutely amazing inside the ring. He's got wins over Colt Cabana. He's got wins over Adam Pearce. He's got wins over Al Snow. I know the list goes on and on. He's got a match coming up with Goldust. He is the painted face warrior, kind of like an American version of the Great Muda, and he's probably one of the two top wrestlers in the NWA who is not currently one of the major champions. So I think right there is an 8-wrestler elimination where any one of those wrestlers can become the next heavyweight champion of the world. I don't mean a backyard promotion championship that uses a replica belt. I don't mean a promotion that calls itself a world champion that doesn't leave their tiny little town in PA Sorry about the words. But he is a legit world champion. This is a legit world championship, I mean, that's been defended all over the country that traces its lineage all the way back to 1905.
It's George Hackenschmidt.
Yeah, George Hackenschmidt. You got the greats like Harley Race, Ric Flair, Lou Fez, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Ronnie Garvin, just so many, Dusty Rhodes, the Briscoes, the Funks. So many great wrestlers have held that NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And now, in Clayton, New Jersey, you can witness history and see a World Heavyweight Champion crowned.
Now, we're quickly running out of time here. We do got to move on. But where is this going to be held, and how much are tickets?
It's going to be held at the Clayton High School in Clayton, New Jersey. That's located at 350 East Clinton Street in Clayton, New Jersey. The bell time is 7:30 p.m. Doors are going to open around 6:37-ish. And tickets are $15 from ringside, which, by the way, we only have third row left in ringside, and $10 for general admission.
All right. So big thing. It's a benefit show. You're going to see history. There's going to be a lot of other stars there. We can't get into it all. I know Ophidian will be there. Joe Gacy is still signed, as far as I know. But a lot of stars. It's going to be a great night. And, again, a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion will be crowned in Clayton, New Jersey. So that's a big deal.
I agree. It's be a part of history. Be a part of witness history. And, most importantly, come help this poor family, the Pasquale family, in their time of need.
All right. Thanks for joining us tonight, Jaden. We'll be talking soon. I'll see you on Friday.
I'll see you on Friday. Thank you very much.
Okay. So, everybody, that was Jaden from NWA Dog.
Filthy mouth.
What?
Filthy mouth on him.
Well, sometimes things just happen, Dan. But
no.
We are going to get to Steve Corino, the king of old school, Dan.
King of old school.
Right after this.
Fire!
All right, welcome to the show. Steve Carino, you're on with Dan and Dean. Welcome to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
All right, I'm very excited with this, and the first question is going to be just a obvious one. It's going to be breaking in. Where did you break in? Who trained you? Where did you get your start?
Broke in 1994. Wow, it's been a while now. It's going to be 19 years soon. I broke in with at Mark Mess Dungeon in Blandon, Pennsylvania, under Mark and King Kahlua and Tom Brandy. And from there, you know, learned from Dory Funk Jr. In the WWF Dojo. And all over, man. Anywhere I could learn, I learned.
All right. So just describe your early years when you were in the business. Some of the accomplishments up to the ECW big break that you had.
Well, it's funny you say ECWA. ECWA was one of my first stops back when I was young. I started out in the Reading, Pennsylvania area with Pennsylvania Championship Wrestling. Branched out. I branched out pretty quickly after wrestling school. You know, I didn't want to be one of those guys that stuck in like one area for too long. I had lived in Pennsylvania, but my parents had lived in North Carolina, and, you know, that gave me the opportunity to, you know, explore, like, the Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic area, the North Carolina, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, Delaware. You know, I did a lot of traveling my first few years up until, you know, I would say the first 2 years was, you know, all independence that I could go, anywhere from Quebec to Florida. You know, if it was a weekend I was driving and I was getting there and paying my dues, you know, driving hundreds of miles for, you know, dozens of dollars. And then, you know, go ahead.
Oh, he was just laughing.
I was just laughing.
Dozens of dollars, but go ahead.
And then, you know, I was doing dark matches for the WWF at the time, and a lot of Shotgun Saturday Night Job matches, and they liked me, but, you know, they didn't really have the developmental program at that time, so they had sent me to USWA in Memphis, and from there, when that closed, down to WWC in Puerto Rico for a while, and then back up, did more jobs, you know. A lot of stuff on Shotgun Saturday Night, like, you know, I had a hell of a feud with Crush. You know, I think I lost him in every character that he ever had. And once they got to duck the clothesline from him. So, like, I was pretty successful. And then eventually I caught on with ECW, and, you know, the rest is pretty much history.
Now, ECW at that point, it's like 98, I think early 98. They're on a roll. They're going. Well, who reached out to you? Did you get a call from Paul, or how did you get in with them at that point?
It was late 98. I was during, like, the 1998 year, Nova was doing a lot of, like, independent work. And at the time, myself and Simon Diamond were more of the top indie guys on the Northeast. So we got to work a lot of the names. And we used to call it Jobbers to the Stars. And not only did we job on WWE, but, like, you know, if they came, any guys came on the independents, we got that spot too. And I noticed, like, a lot of guys were trying to do, like, hardcore wrestling. At the time, you know, ECW was like a cult following, and, you know, guys anywhere from New York to South Carolina saw that, wow, you know, it's so much easier to do a garbage match than to do, you know, like a pro wrestling match. And I thought to myself, I said, wow, you know, if I did the actual opposite and said that I wouldn't do this hardcore stuff, you know, maybe I would stick out a little bit, because, you know, at the time I was 175, 180 pounds, you know, I was tall but I was thin, you know, and I knew I had the mic skills. So I took the opportunity to develop this character with Nova in the old AWC Mike Illions company, and which ended up being Kevin Knight's IWF, I think, one of those. And then it went from there, and Dreamer was on a show that that we were on, and I did the gimmick, and he liked it. And it was right after November to Remember 98 when, like, Bam Bam left and someone else left, and Paul was looking for indie guys to, you know, start from the bottom and work their way up, and he had Reckless Youth in mind. And Nova said, hey, I got this guy. You know, he's on the indies, and, you know, he'd be a good undercard guy. He can talk, and, you know, let me work with him. And they said, yeah, sure. So I got the chance at the ECW Arena in November of 98, and it was great because, you know, the ECW Arena at that time in late 98, you know, if they didn't know you, you could get eaten alive. Mm-hmm. But I had done a lot of independence in, you know, Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York, that the crowd, a lot of the crowd had been to a show that I had either been on doing this gimmick, doing the anti-hardcore gimmick, so I didn't get crapped on as quickly as, like, somebody that was just coming in for the first time that they had no idea. So that helped, and they gave me a Nova, like, I think 12 to 15 minutes in the opening match, and, you know, they said, go tear the house down. And I was like, wow, you know, I didn't, you know, this is ECW, you know, I didn't know that they wanted every match to tear the house down, but yeah, and Nova, you know, did everything he could to win me a job. And, yeah, you know, I'll forever be, you know, thankful to him for it. And after the show, it was myself, Jazz, Tajiri, and Super Crazy. We all started the same night. We all got offered spots.
Oh, wow. Wow. Those big names later on in wrestling.
Now, one of the feuds that got you on the map with a lot of wrestling fans was the feud with Dusty Rhodes. Just describe that feud for people that might not have been watching ECW at the time.
It was the stars aligned that night. It was we were in Atlanta, Georgia, and it just happened to be the week that Dusty had gotten his release from WCW. And here we were. We're in Atlanta, and I had just gotten off doing the thing with Limp Bizkit. So, and that was such a big thing. It was funny because I never realized how big Limp Bizkit was in 1999 until I went to the concert, did the angle with them, and then saw it on MTV News the next day.
Yeah.
And so the stars aligned. Here we are in Atlanta. I didn't even know Dusty Rhodes was going to be in the crowd. Tommy Dreamer, and we used to joke with Dreamer because he would refer to himself in the third person as the Dream. And we would just do it as a joke, you know. And I think Jack Victory called him the Dream once, and he loved it. So I asked Dreamer, I said, hey, man, what am I doing tonight? He goes, oh, you're working with the Dream. I go, oh, cool, what are we doing? Are we doing a match? Are we doing, are we doing like a promo? And he goes, no, man, you're working with the Dream. I go, what? Yeah, and then Dusty Rhodes comes in. I'm like, holy crap. And, yeah, here he is, Dusty Rhodes in the flesh. And all it was supposed to be one night. It was supposed to be not televised, but they wanted to do something for the house, and that was why Joey Styles was out there and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And it worked out so well that he went to Paul and said, hey, man, you know, I'd like to do something with you guys, and, you know, I think we could do something with this kid, and, you know, he put me on the map.
Now, if I remember correctly, it culminated in a bull rope match, I believe. Was it Living Dangerously?
Living Dangerously, right.
Now, memory serves me correctly, and I've seen it many times. That was a very, very gory match. Was he receptive to it? I mean, this is a guy who, obviously, I don't need to tell you, is huge. I mean, he was huge, and he's wrestling you in a bull rope match, and it was very bloody. I mean, was it his idea? How did that happen?
It was great because they had asked me, like, hey, how do you see this feud ending? And, you know, me being the big fan of Dusty as a kid and, you know, the Horseman and Tully Blanchard and all that stuff, I said to myself, I'm like, you know, how about the bull rope match? And, yeah, we laid it out to him, and it was great. He said, you know, let's do it.
Wow.
So I couldn't believe it. And I had all these ideas, and I brought him, like, sir, you know, I have this idea. How's this? What do you want to do this? And Paul had told me, like, 2 weeks out, he's like, this is going to be the opener of the pay-per-view, and I want it hot. I said, all right, this is what I got in mind. Dusty said, hey, man. He's like, you're the heel. You call it. I said, what? Yeah. And we just went in there and did it. And they're like,
oh my God.
Amazing. Because, you know, Dusty Rhodes, you know, up until he came to ECW, ECW fans would have never accepted him. You know, Dusty Rhodes, this Hulk Hogan, blah, blah, blah. But Dusty Rhodes represented everything that was real hardcore. You know, he bled all the time. He had done this. They knew he wasn't the smart marks knew he wasn't the booker, so he wasn't gonna, you know, he wasn't in it for him and stuff like that. And but like he knows a crowd so well, and that's what he taught me, is to know your crowd. You know, he wasn't getting up until he knew the crowd wanted him to get up. He wasn't gonna make a comeback until he felt it. You know, and I would beat the hell out of him because like he wouldn't come back, and like I would wait, and I'm like, oh, come on, man, you know, I'm getting tired here. And he would wait for that crowd to be with him. And when that crowd was with him, man, it was like turning on the faucet. He would just go. And, you know, it was some of the most fun times of my entire career, because here I am not only in the ring in a program with one of my heroes, but, like, I'm learning with every, like, left foot, left arm. You know, why was he selling this way? Why was he doing this? And, he is a total artist when it comes to shooting a promo and doing this. And, you know, after ECW closed, I got the opportunity to work with him a lot
Turnbuckle.
In his company. And, oh, my goodness, it was like I would just pick his brain in the locker room, and he would get so frustrated. But, you know, I mean, sir, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Well, can we do it this way? Oh, why wouldn't we do this? So, hey, I got this in my mind. And, kid, calm down. It's easy. Listen to the people. Yeah. So, yeah. It was. He was brilliant.
I mean, is that a match? Like, do you remember it happening, or did you have to go back and watch it later and then start remembering it?
No. Like, I could tell you. You know, it's been 12, almost 13 years, and I could tell you from the moment he came in. I can tell you the couple botches that I made throughout. Oh. I can tell you that, you know, I had Jack Victory in the crowd with me because I was, you know, I was still worried the fans were going to attack me, that Jack stayed in the crowd with us the whole time.
Oh, wow.
The finish, you know, the finish that I wanted to come off, and with H.D. Lope being the referee, was, like, by design. And, you know, Paul, I think Paul knew somehow that Tully Blanchard was, like, my favorite wrestler. But, like, I came back to the locker room, and I'm bloody, and he takes me aside, and he pulls me around, and he goes like this, he goes, "That was better than anything that him and Tully ever did." And, like, at that moment, at, you know, almost 27 years old, you know, I almost broke down and cried because, like, you know, it was, like, the greatest, you know, besides my son being born, that was, like, the greatest moment of my life. Being told by your boss that, you know, you went out there with one of your heroes, and he's telling you that it was better than what him and your other hero was doing. So, yeah, wow. it was just one of those matches that I look back on so fondly.
Now, how did it come to pass that Paul Heyman had the confidence to give you the ECW World Heavyweight title? I mean, what went into that? Where were you in on all this? I mean, just go into that.
I wish it was a better story, but it's one of those, like, process of elimination. You know, at the time, ECW was having total financial problems. You know, the TNN deal was expiring, and, you know, payments were not being made, and, you know, he was being the guy that was backing the pay-per-views wasn't paying, and it's one of those things that Paul gets a lot of blame for it, but, you know, I've always blamed Steve Carroll for it, because he could have shared some of that pay-per-view revenue that he was holding back from everybody, but, you know, he decided to, you know, he was going to let the company die. Whereas, you know, the title was never supposed to go on me. It was going to go back to Just Incredible that night. And the problem was is that in that four-way, Sandman, Jerry Lynn, and Just Incredible all had breach of contract grievances in, you know, because they weren't being paid, and they were trying to get out of their contract. I happened to have not put mine in yet, not because I knew, it was just mine was going in the next day. And, like, 3:30 in the afternoon, I knew that, like, it was supposed to come down to me and Just Incredible, and, you know, I would lose. And the idea was, at that time, I was a babyface, and at that time, Tommy Dreamer had so many back problems that Paul didn't know if Tommy was going to be able to wrestle or not.
Right.
And so he had me in position to be that guy that, you know, was going to do some hardcore, and he was going to, you know, stand up for the company and stuff like that. And if Tommy was able to go, he could always switch me back to heel. But Just Incredible was going to be my raven to Tommy, you know, where I would get so close to beating Just Incredible, but there was something that I could never pull that win out. And it was supposed to go for forever. You know, like, I would get so close, but I couldn't do it. And, yeah, it just so happened that, like, everybody had the breach contract in, and I think Paul thought he was going to lose everybody. So, yeah, I was the only guy that, you know, could have survived with the title on for a while.
Now, what was it like working with Paul Heyman? You brought him up, and the financial difficulties, things like that. But besides all that kind of stuff, what was it like working with Paul Heyman, the man?
He was genius, man. Oh, he still is. Like, he's just one of those guys, and he's a motivator. You know, people talk about, like, how he lies and stuff like that, and I'm sure he does. But here's the deal. Like, Paul is one of those guys that, like, can motivate anybody. He'd sell ice to an Eskimo. And, you know, he could talk you up every night. You know, and I could be so mad at him, and I'm sure many people say this. You could be so mad at Paul Heyman, and you walk in, and you're like, you know what, tonight's night, I'm pissed off, he's going to have to do something, and walk in, you walk out of the meeting, you forget everything that you were going to talk to him about, and you're like, man, let me go out there and fall from a 40-foot, you know, ladder tonight, you know, because Paul Heyman said the crowd needed it. He was just amazing on how, he could make you feel so good and so confident in your abilities. That, you know, and he brought out the best of everybody. I bring this up a lot, too, is look at the guys that left ECW for the greener pastures of WCW, WWF, and failed. You know, you look at a Public Enemy is, like, the greatest example. you know, they were exposed for their weaknesses right away.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of guys would leave. Sandman was exposed right away in WCW.
Mm.
these guys leave, and they're like, oh. You know, Paul knew to exploit the positives and, you know, hide the weaknesses. And he did that of everybody. And that's one thing that I always learned that he was doing. So when I was done with ECW, I said, you know what, I can't stay as this guy. I have to keep moving and creating new parts of, you know, my persona and stuff like that, or I'm going to get stuck in a rut where, as you can see, like, you know, my peers, a lot of those guys are stuck in ruts, and you're like, you know, what are they going to do? They've become one-dimensional when without Paul.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Dan.
I just didn't expect that. So you didn't like Hack, huh?
Huh?
You didn't like Sandman as Hack, huh?
No.
No, I agree.
Yeah, Sandman's Sandman.
Yeah, exactly.
Sandman is one of those guys that he is what he is. And I like to equate him as that dog that you hate and you want to kick in the face, but at the last minute as you're raising that shoe up to nail him right in the mug, he looks at you with those sad eyes, and you're like, come here, give me a hug, like that. Yeah, and it's funny because I've been mad at Sandman so many times over the years where I just wanted to punch him in the face, and as I'm about to punch him in the face, he's like, yeah, I love you. I'm like, yeah, I love you too, Hack. You know, he's just one of those, like, fun, good-hearted guy.
So what I'm going to – because I've heard many things over the years. What exactly – I'm going to ask it like this. What was the reason you left ECW for?
Bankruptcy.
Oh.
Yeah, they had you know, it was one of those things where after the January 2001 pay-per-view, everybody knew that it was over. I mean, everybody knew it was over. So everybody was scrambling for as many spots as possible. I mean, the company filed for bankruptcy in March. Paul was on Raw in March and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There were so many guys that were trying to go WWF, WCW, that, you know, it was like everybody's jumping off the Titanic, and no one really wanted to. We all wanted to go down with the ship, but we were all worried about, you know, what's going to go on. So, you know, that's the only reason. You know, it's one of those things, like, ECW was a great job. I loved it, and, I loved my time there, but it was a job. People don't realize that, you know, people say, oh, do you miss ECW? And the answer is no. You know, it's one of those things that I loved it, but, you know, it was hard style, and it was a great learning place. But, you know, to me, I was a huge Japanese fan. You know, I loved Japanese wrestling growing up. I loved, you know, getting, you know, trading tapes and magazines with other fans and stuff. And, you know, that was always my dream, where other people, like, want to go to, you know, WrestleMania, or, you know, mm-hmm. they want to do this or do that. You know, my goal was, you know, to Corkin Hall and Rigo Kosumo Hall and traveling and stuff like that. Because, you know, so when ECW was done, you know, that was where I really wanted to go, you know.
Now, and I'm going to ask you it this way. I remember, this is a while ago, obviously, that I heard that you signed a contract with WCW, and obviously, and this is early 2001 before they went under or got sold to WWE, and you never made your debut. Were you, in fact, signed by them, and what happened if you were?
I spent 39 days under contract. Yep.
And they never used
it was one of those things that, like, I had signed right off after the last ECW pay-per-view. And the original plan that they had told me was that I would attack Dusty during the match that they was supposed to be Flair and Jarrett versus Dusty and Dustin.
Yeah,
I would attack Dusty, and we would do me and Dusty for a little bit. And it would have led into me and Dustin being a team, like a heel tag team, where he was going to turn against his dad, and we were going to, you know, like be like, you know, this like crazy cowboy tag team. And about a week before that pay-per-view, I got a call that said, kid, you know, you got to stay home. You're not going to debut yet. We'll get you in there. Don't worry. Mm. And then I started hearing the rumblings of, you know, I don't think this is going to, you know, Eric Bischoff's company wasn't going to be able to buy WCW, and it was going to be going bad. And, like, all of a sudden we're like, oh, boy.
Oh,
and I'm
really
thinking, like, as soon as I had heard that Vince had bought WCW, I did everything I could to, like, I turned off my computer, I turned off my phone, I stayed in my house. I'm thinking, you know, because I had a contract that's, you know, they had these 90-day clauses where they could get rid of you every 90 days. And my contract, I had taken less money to get the security of having a guaranteed deal. But my guaranteed deal was only guaranteed if I made it through the first 90 days.
Well,
so all I'm thinking was, there's 100 guys under contract. They can't get through these contracts that quick. There'll be no way. Yeah, within like 3 or 4 days, here comes the FedEx guy. I'm like, no, go away, go away. Yeah, and then, I debuted in Japan a week later.
So instead of using you, they decided to, you know, book Scott Steiner and Jeff Jarrett again. That's wonderful.
Yeah, right?
That worked out. Awesome. Good, Dean.
I did get 7 weeks of pay, so I was happy about that.
Well, there you go. All right, that worked out.
So WCW didn't work out, so you moved along to the independent scene. Along that time, you won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. What was that moment like, getting a title that stretches back to, you know, the Flairs and Steamboats? What was that moment like for you?
You know, it was cool at the time because I think a little known fact is a lot of people don't realize, like, I was supposed to actually get the title before Rapata. September 2000 tournament was, I was originally in the tournament, and it was an idea that Paul and I had come up with was to have, like, an old-school guy be, you know, the NWA champion. And I was going to, and I didn't turn babyface at this point yet. And I was going to win this tournament, and I would go on television as the NWA champion, but I would never put the title on the line. I would come out with the belt, I would do that. And Howard Brody and everything, like, everybody was on board with this, and then I would go on different weekends and defend it into the member territories. And about a week before the pay-per-view, where I was already turned babyface, which I was thinking, like, how's this going to work if I'm supposed to be a heel on TV with the NWA title, but now I'm babyface in ECW going after the ECW title.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, how's this going to work? Yeah, a week before, Paul pulled me from the he pulled me from the tournament. And, it caused so many problems because I was in Los Angeles, and Dave Sapolsky calls me and goes, hey, man, if you talk to Paul, I'm like, oh, no, what's going on? He said, he's pissed. He's like, he just pulled you from the NWA tournament. I'm like, what? Yeah, and it ended up where I told Howard Brody, I said, you know, I'm so mad at Paul because, you know, we had given them our word that, you know, this is what we were going to do. And I thought, this is going to look like they're trying to pull a Shane Douglas thing on them. And I said, you know, if I leave ECW ever, you know, the first thing I want to do is get that NWA title. And, it was the first thing, like, ECW closed in January, and I was the NWA champion by April. And, you know, it was cool because Bill Alfonso was the referee for the match, which, you know, he asked to be the referee of the match, and Brian Blair was, you know, as soon as I won, he came out and said, you know, congratulations, and, you know, it's a very important belt to the wrestlers and stuff like that. And it ended up being like the worst 6 months of my career.
Wow.
It was awful, man. It's being the NWA champion is cool. Dealing with the NWA promoters and the politics will make you want to pull your hair out. And within a month, all I could do was think of, man, I can't wait to lose this, because I was dealing with one shiesty promoter after another, and I would just beat Howard Brody's ear every week about, get the belt off me, I can't deal with these guys, you know. There was a set rate that the NWA champion had, and it was 40% less than what I was working for on the regular independent, because, you know, I was right off ECW, I was getting a good amount of money. But, right. You know, there was all these things where they would have all these rules where, oh, you can't lose or you can't do this or, you know, or somebody wouldn't use me in, for example, Bill Barons wouldn't use me in Georgia because, you know, he had that NWA wild side and, you know, he didn't pay anybody. They all worked, you know, for the sake of being on TV. So he didn't want to pay me. But in turn, he didn't want me working for Dusty Rhodes in Georgia, a non-NWA member, or defend the NWA title or lose, you know. And it just got to the point where it's like, man, all I want to do is get this damn belt off me. You know, this thing that, you know, when I was 8 years old, that was the first championship belt I ever saw on TV.
Right.
With the NWA title.
Yeah.
And, man, like, it was September of 81, and which is crazy because I started watching wrestling maybe February of 81. So, like, I must have seen the Georgia heavyweight title or the national heavyweight title on. But when Flair came on that first time after he won the title and he was on Georgia TV, I was like, oh, my God, this is my dream to have this title. And
yeah.
It was like, I had it, and all I wanted to do was, like, get rid of it afterwards because you had these guys that were just ruining it time after time after time. And, you know, I'm going out there and I'm busting my ass with, you know, a local guy and, you know, trying to do my best of, like, thinking, like, oh, what would Flair or Harley Race do? You know, they're going to get 20 or 25 or 30 minutes out of this guy. And you had to deal with the promoter. Hey, man, can you drop a fall to him? You know, there's two ways we can do this, guy. We can do a disqualification, or three ways. We can do a disqualification, I win, or we go an hour. Like, who wants to go an hour? And, you know, I would go in there with, like, a piece of garbage, like, what was this guy's name in Winnipeg? The Spider. Like, oh, this guy was freaking awful. And, you know, I would go to these member promotions, and instead of working their top guy, I would work the third or fourth guy. Because, you know, oh, can't job out the top guy. Like, you can't.
Oh, my God.
You know, you're supposed to be working the world's heavyweight champion. Losing to the world's heavyweight champion is not going to kill you. And, oh, instead, he killed me. Oh, I was like, oh, man. Thanks for bringing it up.
Good job, Dean. Good job.
So after that disappointment, it was a great moment, became a disappointment. You continued working on the independents. You wound up in Ring of Honor. What was your first run like in Ring of Honor?
You know, at first, because I was looking, like, after my NWA run, I was looking to get out. I wanted to get out of wrestling. Like I was so mad at putting up with all these promoters. Like, I thought, I'm like, you know what, I can go and do another job and not be angry every day. And Gabe and Rob Feinstein and Doug Gentry were like, hey, man, would you like to do, like, color commentary for our new company? I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do it. And, you know, I was blown away right away from watching their product. And, like, to this day, it's been over 10 years watching that Loki versus Daniel Bryan versus Christopher Daniels three-way. It was just one of those things, like, I went horse calling it with Eric Gargiulo because, you know, like, it was the greatest match I had ever seen live at that point. And I had done some stuff where Gabe had these ideas of me getting in the ring and being just like the one true heel of the company, because originally the true heel of the company was supposed to be Christopher Daniels. But Christopher Daniels is cool and he does cool moves, and, like, even when he's being a heel, he's Christopher Daniels and still pretty cool, whereas I can go out there and I have this ability to, that, like, I can make people hate me, and I'll push the envelope. And I had the deal with Japan where I was going every 2 weeks for 2 weeks. So I was 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I told Gabe, you know, here's what I'd like to do. If I'm coming in, I want to be hit and run. Like, I'll hit, I'll do something, and right before I'm supposed to lose that big match, I'm out the door. And I'll be gone for 3 or 6 months. And when I come back, we'll fire it back up. And as I'm about to do that job again, I'm out the door again. And, it worked for years up until, you know, I left in 06, and then I left for 3 years and came back in 09, and I've been there ever since.
Now, you left in 06. You did a retirement tour in 2007. Was that legit at the time?
Yeah, it was definitely legit at the time. I was, you know, I was hurt. I was having problems with concussions. and to the point where it seemed like I was hitting my head on every show. Like it could have been just like a regular back bump. It could have been anything, but I was getting hurt so much to where I wanted to get out. I wanted to, you know, I started a new career, and you know, I thought that was going to go well. And if it wasn't for Mr. Wrestling 2, I would have quit totally. And I was the AWA Superstars champion, and I was in Hawaii on I had this great deal where I would go to Hawaii for 3 days. I'd wrestle there, and then I would take off for Japan for 2 weeks. And then on my way back, I would stop in Hawaii for 3 days, wrestle again, and then go home for a little bit. Very old style. And the first time I was there, I met Mr. Wrestling 2. And he didn't remember me, but I'd actually met him like a year or two before. And we were sitting there, and we were talking at dinner, and we were just talking about, like, random things. But, you know, I pride myself on knowing, like, the history of wrestling. You know, I knew what he had done, and I followed him in the magazines, and, you know, I'd seen him on Georgia Championship Wrestling and stuff like that. And at the end of this dinner, he goes, hey, kid, you know what, let's go work out tomorrow. I'm like, wait, you're 72, like, where are we working out? And he took me into the ring, and he had me wrestle, like, three of the little local Hawaiian guys. And he would tell me to do stuff, and I'd do it, and he takes me aside, and he goes, you know, how would you like me to pass on the name? I go, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, I've never given a Wrestling 3. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, oh, my goodness. And he goes,
wow.
And then I told him, I said, sir, here's the deal. You know, I'm quitting in 2 months. Like, I'm done. Like, this is it. I'm on my retirement tour. I want out. And he's like, oh, no. And, like, over the course of the next, like, two or three tours, we had designed, like, you know, just because talking to him is so fascinating, you know, learning about how he was Jimmy Carter's mother, President Carter's mother. He was her favorite wrestler. And she would go to the Atlanta, the arena all the time before the Omni. Even before the Omni, she would go down to the Coliseum and see him. And, you know, then he'd be like, oh, you know how Tim Woods had a white mask and then two had the little bit. I go, if I would do it, I would have it split. You know, I would have black on one side, white on the other, and, like, we would design these things. And it was like you could tell, like, he was having fun with it. And he goes, look, if you're going to quit the business, he goes, you know what you could do? He's like, you could take dates with the mask. I'm like, oh, you know what? That doesn't sound too bad, you know. I get my little bit of, you know, wrestling in and, you know, and then I could wear the mask and then I could go do my regular job and, you know, different style and stuff like that. And it worked out to the point where we ended up winning the Hawaii tag team titles in the end of 2007 together. You know, 74 years old he was, or 72 or 74. You know, and he came in and he goes, I'm only coming in for the finish. He came in and whipped ass for a while, you know. Like, the two guys that we were wrestling were like, Steve, please tag in, please tag in. You know, yeah, Johnny was just going crazy on these guys, you know, chopping them on the throat, rubbing their face in the mat. And these guys were like big, you know, Hawaiian kids. You know, those island kids are tough. Yeah, and Johnny was just rubbing them, you know, stretching them. I'm like, man, imagine this guy 20, 30 years ago. And I do the character of Mr. Wrestling 3 almost as like a Superman now. Whereas, like, I do it a lot more in Japan than I do in the States. But I do it to where, you know, Steve Corino's beaten down so much that, oh, be careful on the next show, because here comes Mr. Wrestling 3. And it's like, here, I put on my blue suit and my cape and, you know, save the day. And it's fun now, you know, because I can come out and people know it's me. Especially in Japan, it's cool because I'll do it and people know it's me and they'll play along with it or... you know, we had it once where Kamikaze had the mask on and I teamed with them and like we would look at each other and we'd like mirror imaged everything that we did. So yeah, now it's become a fun character that I do every once in a while.
That's amazing. That's a great story.
And moving along, you said you came back in 2009 to Ring of Honor. Now, how is the second run compared to the first?
Second one's great because now, you know, I'm older. So it's and at the time, I had just come back from a year in Puerto Rico. I'd done a year with Carlos Colon, and, you know, if being the NWA champion was bad, being the WWC Universal champion was even worse. You know, I had come back, and I was 265 pounds. I was, like, you know, I was living next to the beach, and I wasn't going to the beach. I was so white. I hated life. I came back, and my sister, Allison Danger, was still working for Ring of Honor at the time. And she's like, oh, come down to a show, you know, see the boys and stuff like that. And she knew my confidence was down. I saw Adam Pearce, and Adam's like, and he was booking this time. He goes, if you ever want a job, you know, let me know. I said, look, Adam, I am not in the shape, you know, to put up with these guys and stuff like that. I said, but, you know, thank you, and, you know, I'll but he gave me something to work for. And about a month later, him and Kevin Steen call me and say, hey, we got this idea. We want to run it by you. We don't know if you'll like it or not. And originally the idea was is that in Ring of Honor, of all the years that have gone by, consistently I've been the biggest, the most evil person that's been there. And I've come and I've caused trouble and I've ran out and I've done this and I've quit the company and I've been fired and I've done all this stuff. And Kevin wanted to turn heel, and he wanted to do it to the point where it was like there was a manipulator and somebody that was causing him to find these evil feelings. And they came up with the idea that it was me, and it's you know, because Kevin and I have been close for a long time, but, you know, it's one of the things where I always took, like, a mentor role to Kevin, like Jack Victory took to me. And this was a way of, like, being with him, and they said, look, it's going to be more of a manager role. You're not going to have to wrestle much, and it's going to be with Generico, and then you'll do a couple matches with Cabana, and it just took off, and it was great. You know, it was like one of, like 2010 was my favorite year ever with Ring of Honor because the feud worked so well. It was, you know, Kevin Steen and El Generico with me and Cole Cabana as the supporting cast, and like it was just done so perfectly. And you know, they had the attention of the fans for that long. You know, it's hard to do. You know, when feuds last on TV for up, you know, pay per view to pay per view. So, yeah. You know, and then, you know, Kevin loses the Loser Leaves Town match and leaves me without a job. You know, so I turn babyface and I do the whole redemption. I'm trying to turn, you know, everything that I've done, I'm trying to redeem myself from evil. So, you know, it's one of those things where it was like, you know, that was fun. And then Kevin comes back and, you know, I end up going back to him. So it was great. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you just have fun, you know. And now, you know, a year later after Kevin comes back, here I am, and, you know, I'm one half of the ROH Tag Team Champions. You know, it's something I never thought we were going to happen, and, you know, stars aligned again.
Now, speaking of having fun and promoting a positive message, you started the Dreams Project. Just go into the Dreams Project. I've had Michael Keener on. I've had Atu on discussing it. Where did this come about? And just let us know what it's about.
Well, Dreams Project is a concept that I came up with where it's, you know, you look at professional wrestling, and professional wrestling always has that circus atmosphere to it where people look at it as, you know, pro wrestling. You know, it's never looked upon in a positive light. And it's our own fault, you know, how many guys have ruined it. And it's one of those things where you think to yourself, like, you know, how can we change it? And we change it by doing everything we can to change it. So, I came up with this idea of, you know, putting out, like, not only are we putting out matches, good versus evil and stuff like that, but we're actually having the guys talk to the fans and say, hey, this is how I was as a kid, or I was bullied as a kid, or I had a drug problem, or, you know, I was a star athlete that thought I was too big for my britches, and then, you know, I was the one that was being the bully, and then, you know, I got beaten down and stuff like that. So it's one of those things where we did it for a community center in July, and it worked out so well that we decided to do like a monthly program. And we had a show this Sunday, but it sucks because of the northeast weather. We had to push it off, and we're going to do it on December 15th. But we got such a great crew, you know. You know, like you were saying, Michael Keener, too. You know, Adam Cole's our WWL champion. You know, we have Grizzly Redwood, but Grizzly Redwood is a heel. And we're telling them, like, we're basically selling the fans to the point where it's like, hey, look, you know, there's a reason Grizzly turned, and this is why, and you can kind of justify it, but help him see the right way. And we're not preaching about, you know, God or anything like that. We're preaching about, like, have a positive spin on life. You know, life isn't so bad. You know, you have to, you know, professional wrestlers are the only people that are going to be able to change the image of professional wrestling in the star way. You know, putting out positive things, you know, going out there, heels, babyface, sign autographs for the fans. You know, they know it's a work. You know, if you don't know it's a work in today's world, you're living in West Virginia. but, you know, that doesn't mean we insult their intelligence. You know, I watched Tom Hanks in Philadelphia, and I believe that during that 2 hours that Tom Hanks has AIDS. But I watch, you know, but I see him on a TV show, and I go, oh, Tom Hanks doesn't have AIDS. He's an actor. You know, you know, professional wrestling in 2012 is athletic entertainment. You know, we use sports entertainment when we talk about the WWE, but professional wrestling is live theater. You know, it's guys going out there and, you know, putting out the, you know, the controlled violence and stuff like that. And we're going out there and we're making people forget what they have to do for the next 3 hours and stuff like that. So we want people at Dreams Project to know that you go out there, you cheer, you boo, and at the end of the night, you know, heels are on one side signing autographs for their fans, quote-unquote, their fans, and, you know, baby faces are in the other, you know, for their fans and stuff like that. And, you know, it was so much fun. We had our first, like, real show in September, and it's a builder town because Birdsboro is in, like, the middle of nowhere. And it was fun because, you know, we only drew, like, 60 or 70 the first time, but it was so loud, like, everybody downstairs was like, are we sure that, this place is going to be there? And it's going to build. We're going to build more and more and more. And, you know, we're going to create things out of everybody. You know, everybody will have a character. Everybody will have, like, you know, an idea of what they're going to do. And it's a fun program. If you go to doyouliveyourdreams.com, you'll get to see a little bit of, like, what we're doing and, you know, how you can come out and help. You know, we're doing birthday parties and where, you know, a kid wants to come and bring his friends to a wrestling show, and the birthday boy gets, you know, a spotlight on him, and he gets to ring announce the match and stuff like that. At the bottom line, positivity through pro wrestling, and we're making it fun. You know, we want it to be like, oh, I went to that show, but it was the crap, you know. But we went to this Dreams Project show, and it was fun. You know, we're never going to be Ring of Honor. We're never going to be CZW. We're never going to be Chikara. We're never going to be all these, like, great companies, PWG, you know. But we're going to be just fun. That's all we're going to do. We're going to go out there. We're going to have fun with the fans and, you know, try and build up the town and bring that message up, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, bring that positive spin to pro wrestling.
All right. So, where can people follow both you and the Dreams Project as we move on?
You can follow the Dreams Project at doyouliveyourdreams.com, and you can also follow them on Twitter at dreams_project. Myself, you can follow me on worldofcarino.com. I got brand new shirts out there, so if you go there, you should buy some shirts and stuff like that. And, you know, I update my website by myself. You know, I do a lot of the stuff like that, and I update it regularly. You'll see the schedule. You'll see the 2013 schedule's already out. A lot of people have been asking me about this NWA title situation going on. Tomorrow I have this whole blog on the NWA and, like, why people find it negative. And hopefully people get, like, a different idea of, you know, seeing what the NWA is and why people see why it's not working and how it can work, you know. I'm fixing the NWA's problem. I can fix the economy, too. I've done that in the earlier blog. Yeah. No one listens to me. But I was born in Canada, so I can't be president.
Well,
and
you
I
know what?
In my closet.
It's any idea is better than what we got now.
Right, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Steve Carino, you know, or you can follow my podcast, the Extreme Odd Couple podcast, at XOC Producer. We're at XOCpodcast.com. It's me and Rob Dimension every week. And if you know me and Rob Dimension, like, for 12 years we've been arguing with each other, and now we just do it on a, you know, we do it on our podcast.
Well, on behalf of myself and Dan, this has been an honor to have you on. We'd like to have you back anytime you want to plug the next Dreams Project show or whatever.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, this was absolutely...
absolute honor. It was... wow.
thanks for having me, guys.
And one last thing. Our next guest, Papadon, says hi.
Oh, Papadon's going to ask you to be a host on his show, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, always, you know. If you have a show, he'll ask to be on it.
We've had him on plenty of times, let me tell you. But
it pretty much is his show, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Poopadon will always ask for that's what I call him, Poopadon.
I'm not saying a word.
I'm leaving that one alone, but Mr. Carino, you have a great night.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you guys too.
All right, so everyone, that was Steve Carino.
It's a great interview, man.
Oh, was it ever?
I mean, I didn't know what to say. Honestly, it's like I watched him on TV. Now I'm talking to him. That's weird.
It can be, Dan. But let's move on. Calling, dialing in.
Boy.
Good old Papadon. And I still don't get why we dial him.
Hey, make fun of you.
Yeah.
We ought to have dialing music for him.
Hello?
Hello, is this the Greek god Papadon?
Yes, it is.
Hello, sir.
How are you, Double D?
I'm doing great. Dan Law is here, and so is Omega Squad, your favorite.
What's up there, Optimus? How are they hanging?
they're a little sugared up tonight. So.
Oh, you're hanging out with Dan Law, I see you then.
Now, Papadon, the reason I initially got you on, you're part of this grand opportunity. You've been talking about it for about a year now, that you won an opportunity at the NWA World title. You have your shot Friday night in Clayton, New Jersey. Prophecies will ring true. Give me something.
How do you feel, man? I mean, this is – I'll take it from Dean. This is a – we can't push this up – any higher. This is a title that was held by Flair, Race, Steamboat. It goes back to 1905. As far as I'm concerned, the most important title there is out there in wrestling, and this is your shot. How do you feel, first of all?
Well, I feel very honored and privileged to have the opportunity, and I'm excited. And, you know, you have your naysayers out there. Let them say whatever they want to say. But I'm pretty sure any kid or any adult who's laced up their boots, if they had the opportunity to be NWA champion, they'd jump at it. If not, then they're an idiot. And that's the bottom line. You named a few people on a long list of great people who've held that title. And, you know, just like any other industry, you'll have your ups and your downs. And, you know, you will have politics and situations that occur when new management takes over, but at the end of the day, the legacy's still there, and that's what matters. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, the NWA is a company of the past. Well, if you don't know your past, then you won't have a future. So bottom line is, the NWA is just as strong now. Of course, it's nice. I said it, you fool. But so the NWA can and will be just as strong now as it once was, because when I win the title, I'll take that title to the stratosphere, make it mean more than it does now, just like I did with the ECWA title. So obviously they're going to want somebody with some kind of expertise who can carry a company on its back and make those letters relevant. And I've done it before. I'll do it again.
Now, when you heard you were getting the shot, I mean, again, we don't have to talk about the history. I mean, we could for hours. Did you feel humble, or what's going on?
No, I wasn't hanging out with the Iron Sheik, so I wasn't humbled. But yes, to be quite frank and to be honest with you, I was in shock, because your email that you sent me, that's how I found out about it.
Oh,
whoa!
Because when you came to me and said, "Hey, so-and-so. I said, what the f*** are you talking about? So I looked on the site, and I saw the press release, and I went, holy f***. You know?
Well, I sent him a message like, dude, congratulations, kick ass like you're gonna. And he just said, thanks, ... Like,
well, there
so,
you go.
So there you go. But you know what? Doesn't matter how I found out about it. The fact that I had the opportunity, that's all that matters. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually very, very excited because when I walk home, you know, with 10 pounds of leather and gold around my waist, you know, it's going to be a dream come true. It was a dream for me to work for the ECWA. I've been trying to get my foot in the door for the longest. It was a dream for me to become its champion. It was a dream for me to win the Super 8 or just be in the Super 8 and win it. And I've accomplished all those goals. You know, I was an NWA regional champion. I was the last NWA cyberspace heavyweight champion. I was a two-time NWA cyberspace internet champion. I was NWA cyberspace tag team champion. So it would be very, very awesome if I could win a world's title. So that's exactly what I'm looking to do when I step in Clayton, New Jersey on the 2nd of November. Now, look, I have a big test ahead of me. And 7 other guys at one time. I know Dan Law is used to handling 7 guys at one time, but, you know, 7 guys at one time, and they're all skilled performers. And I heard a radio show the other day. I didn't hear it when it was going live, but I listened to it today where they interviewed Damon Wayne and the other guy, what's his name, from West Virginia.
Erickson,
and,
right?
Erickson, Leif Erickson. And, you know, they had some nice words to say about me and the other guys, and you know, and I appreciate them stating nothing but facts, but, you know, they're good guys, or they could be good guys. I really don't know, you know, most of them. They are very talented, but this isn't a popularity contest, and I'm stepping into that ring on the 2nd with, you know, guns a-blazing, and I'm looking to not only make my presence felt, but like you said, fulfill the prophecies and cement my legacy. I mean, put it this way. Everything in life goes full circle, right? It started with the Greeks. We invented wrestling. The NWA carried out its legacy on a prestigious level, you know, with all their roll call of great champions throughout the years. Now it's in the hands, yet again, how ironic it is and how it does come full circle, that it's in the hands of a Greek to take it into the future. So it started with the Greeks, and now it's going to be saved and continued on by another Greek, a Greek god.
Now, the next night in Newark, Delaware, you have a chance to recapture the title you never should have lost, quite frankly.
Exactly. Exactly, Double D. Holy cow. You don't even know how pissed off I am about that. But, yes, I do have an opportunity to get Big Red back around my shoulders, back around my waist, wherever I decide to wear it. But and a four-way dance with Tony Mamaluke, that punk, and that chump, Chris Wilde, and Josh, by God, my chops hurt like hell, Daniels. So, absolutely. You're correct with your statement before I cut you off.
No, I probably know the answer to this, but I just wanted to ask you something that's been on my mind since I found out you're getting the title shot. On the independent level, does the NWA at that level, like I said, I think I know the answer, still mean what it did in the 80s, in the 70s, back in the early 1900s. Does it still mean to you guys what it meant then?
Absolutely. The name, the initial NWA is synonymous with wrestling. The Yankees cannot win the World Series every year. Does it mean the Yankees are not a great team? You know what I'm saying? Like I just said, you know, I said earlier in the interview, every business, every company has its ups and its downs. Now, granted, if the NWA had a national TV deal, you know, like the WWE, like a TNA, you know, then obviously people will look at the title a little differently. When it was defended in TNA, all those all those haters and naysayers who were talking trash about the NWA, all of a sudden were sweating the NWA, you know? All of a sudden, they were all on the bandwagon again. And then when TNA decided to part ways with the NWA, then they decided to be grumpy little bastards and talk trash about the NWA. So, you know, you put 10 people in a room, 5 are going to say one thing, 5 are going to say another. You're not going to make everybody happy all the time. But in my eyes, the NWA is one of the most prestigious titles in all professional wrestling. And to have the opportunity, wrestling for it is an honor, but
when I win it, it's going to even be a bigger honor because I will be part of an elite club of great wrestlers to hold that title.
All right. Now, you have a busy month of November as well. You got Extreme Rising coming up. You got ICW making its return to New York. Just go on with the rest of your bookings.
Okay. Well, what you missed at Witching Hour over there in Sewell, New Jersey, was me and Tony Mamaluke and I had a match of the night. I mean, obviously, I always do, but I carried his punk ass through a 15-minute draw, and the reason why I went to the draw, it's part of the conspiracy theory. There was a second shooter on the grassy knoll, and because that fat Dairy Queen referee, John Finnegan, tells that dinosaur of an announcer, Dan Arthritis, to ring the bell, I was about to cut a promo, you know, and put my hand out in respect to Mama Luke, because I respected his admiration and passion for the business, and because he was trained by Dean Malenko, a man that I idolized, and this idiot rings the bell. And I looked at him and said, why'd you ring the bell? And Bob Arthritis goes, well, he told me to. And right about where I had Mama Luke in the palm of my hand, and he was about to tap out, the bell rings. Now, if he would have rang the bell when we officially started, Mama Luke would have tapped out, I would have beat him, and I would have been the victor. But I'm not one to cry over spilled milk. What I do get upset about is that I did give my hand out of respect to Mama Luke. He decided to do a little song and dance for the peasants to get their applause so he can feel relevant again. I mean, Guido wasn't in the building that night, so he couldn't carry Guido's bags, couldn't hold his coattails, couldn't ride him that night. So, you know, he decided to go into business for himself. He says, well, if I, you know, go into business for myself and bust open Papa Don, maybe my career can get a little fire behind it and it'll take off. So he threw a stiff shot, popped me back open, my eye open, boom, 5 stitches later, there you go. But I continued the match. I had him almost beat with a busted eye. You know, so come Saturday, not only do I win with Big Red, but I also get a little revenge. You know what I mean?
I do.
All right. Then Sunday in New York, I'm making my debut for Dragon Gate USA with Tony Nese. It's Tony Nese and I as a team versus The Scene, which is managed by that little prissy girl, Larry Dallas. And the team of The Scene consists of Caleb Conley and Scott Reed. Now, they had an open challenge, and we accepted. So in Deer Park at the NYWC Sportatorium on Sunday, all you New Yorkers or all the people in Tri-State County, you don't have any power. You don't have any TV. You have no power, no TV, no problem. Come to Dragon Gate USA and come check it out. And for all those individuals out there who, you know, live in other states and can't make it to New York, just go to WWNLive.com and get it on iPay-Per-View. You're going to have an amazing night of action. You're going to see all the stars of Dragon Gate USA. You're going to see an amazing match, Seema versus Sami Callihan, two of the best in the world today. You're going to have the greatest unsigned talent in the world today. That's me. On the card, you're going to have Tony Nese, the premier athlete. You're going to have that girl, Larry Dallas, screaming and hollering like a little bitch around the ring like he always does. And, you know, you're going to have the stars of the NYWC on the show as well. So it's worth the price of the eye pay-per-view. It's worth the price of the admission. I mean, what else are you going to do? Go to a bar and hopefully they have power. You can watch a work sport like the NFL. You know what I mean? Ooh. Come and watch Dragon Gate USA and have a good time. You know, bring your friends, bring your family. And enjoy a Sunday night out.
Enjoy a Sunday night out. What else you got?
Well, let's see. Since you asked, and I have to do your job because I keep talking and you're not talking. Let's see. I'm the 10th. ICW's back in New York, right? I'm wrestling Roderick Strong. I'm looking forward to that match because that individual, Roderick Strong, is one hell of a wrestler. Unfortunately, he's making partnerships and deals with that prick, Nana, Prince Nana. You know, Nana used to have a little group called Nana Corp in ICW, which consisted of myself, Christopher Daniels, Pinky Sanchez, Xavier. And, you know, if it was just me and I didn't get along with Nana, then you know what? It's all right. We just didn't get along. But everyone in the group quit. Why? Because Nana doesn't know how to do business. Nana is not what he claims to be. He's a peasant. He's a malaka. And bottom line is, I quit. I was the last member to quit. He cost me one too many victories, you know, because of his negligence and incompetency. So I said, you know what?
I'm out. I'm too good to lose matches because, you know, you can't hold your end of the bargain. So now he's coming back with some new group called the Circle of Disrespect, and his first hired gun is Roderick Strong. So for all the fans out there, you know, this is going to be a nice match. It's going to be probably match of the night. And some people are, you know, have even said, oh, this is a dream match for me, watching you and Roderick Strong go, two technical, skilled performers. That's on the 10th in Deer Park, New York, at the NYWC Sportatorium again. And then on the 17th, in Pittsburgh, or close to Pittsburgh, wherever the hell it is, it's Extreme Rising. I found out today that I'll be wrestling Stevie Richards. So I'm looking forward to it, because Stevie Richards is one hell of a wrestler. He can go, and he's in shape. He's not one of these guys that are past his prime and still holding on to the business for dear life, so they can stay, you know, in the spotlight or get a percentage of a spotlight that they used to have. So it's going to be a great match. So I look forward to kicking his ass, you know. And then I will do what I do best: that's entertain, steal the show, and progress my movement in this tournament that they want to have to crown the first Extreme Rising champion. You know, I have plenty of rooms to hold plenty of belts, so I do it all, my friend.
Sounds good to me, Papa Don.
Yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
All right, good evening, Ron.
Yo, Dean Dixon, what's up, boss?
This is Mac Daddy Ron Starr. You're with Dan, Dean, and Omega. Welcome to
what's
Hell in a Cell Talk
Radio.
First of all, I would like to apologize for keeping you on hold that long. But now you're on the show, so let's make the best of this. We have 15 minutes left of the stream, but we're going to go to overtime with you, sir. So don't worry,
absolutely,
it will be on the podcast. So, first of all, I just wanted to start out with, how did you break into this business? You gave me a bit of a teaser when we were talking about it. How did you break into this wonderful, wacky world of professional wrestling?
Well, originally in 1991, there was a place called Ringmasters Wrestling School. And if you're not familiar, that was the training school for the now famous Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, Joe Goodhart. They ran shows Civic Center in Philly, and Joe Goodhart also had a wrestling radio show on Saturday morning. And, you know, I would listen to it, you know. I mean, it's been a lifelong wrestling fan, and in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do it. As a kid, you know, I always wanted to do it. And, Joe Goodhart did an interview with the current, at that time, PWA champion, a guy by the name of J.T. Smith. And in an interview, It came to light, because I'd never been to a TWA show prior to that. It came to light that J.T. Smith was African-American. That blew my mind, because watching wrestling all my life, I mean, very rarely did you see an African-American champion as the top, you know, at the top of any company. And this was even before Butch Reed. Before Ron Simmons became WCW World Champion, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We had Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas were the tag team champions, and that didn't last long. And, you know, you had Iceman King Parsons in Texas, and you had guys like Lacalle Brown, but those guys were like regional champions. And to me, and yes, TWA was a regional promotion, but that was like a big deal. And I said, wow, this guy is like the champion, and he's dominating champion. I said, you know, I need to check this out. And I went down, I tried out, met Joe Goodhart, met J.T. Smith, Jimmy Jannetty, and Donnie Allen. And, you know, I had a tryout. And, you know, I was all set to train with TWA, and as fate would have it, I suffered a broken ankle and I couldn't train. I actually didn't train for 4 years. It just so happened in 1994-95, it was like the biggest resurgence of ECW in Philly. And there was a place in Philadelphia called Hawkins Gym, which is a place where a lot of guys who broke into the business around the same time I did train. And, in fact, the first day that I went down there, it was a who's who. Steve Corino was down there, Reckless Shoes, Thomas Rodman, Jared Ryder. I'm just a literal who's who of guys who were, like, big on the scene then. Because, you know, you had ECW, you had ECWA, PCW, all different kinds. Liberty All-Star Wrestling was another company that was big then. You know, all these guys were training, and these guys were the guys that I was reading about in the magazines, and I kind of got to rub shoulders with them a little bit. I have to say, just taking a break for a second, the Steve Corino interview was awesome. I mean, just getting to hear his view on the wrestling business, you know, he's a guy I always admired, always looked up to, you know. You know, then, you know, it was just really good to hear his take on wrestling. But, you know, like I said, he was one of those guys that I saw when I first started training. So, yeah, 95 at Hawkins is when I broke in.
Okay. And so what were some of your accomplishments on the early scene after you did break in? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I kind of bumped around some of the smaller companies that are around OWC, ICW, like little local companies around the area. And then in 1997, a guy by the name of Izzy Avilas, who was a boxing promoter, he met a group of guys who I had been working with, you know, on some smaller shows. And he had by chance ran into him outside of a restaurant. They had gotten, they had just left a wrestling show, I believe. And they were frustrated because of the promoters at the time. You know, you guys talk big, didn't deliver. And, you know, these guys were frustrated, and they were talking about leaving the business. So, you know, he just kind of picked their brain about the wrestling business and asked them if there was any money in it. And they told him, yeah, lots of money in it. So this guy was, he was all about a big spectacle. A lot of his boxing shows were big spectacles, you know, very sexy women and DJ battle, things like that. That's what he would do to make his boxing shows exciting. He operated out of a place called the Felt Supper Club, which is on Rising Sun Avenue in North Philadelphia. And it was a beautiful theater that set about 1,500 people. And he would pack boxing in there. So he took a leap of faith with us, guys who, you know, I guess we were in some of the small indies, but he built the Grand Wrestling Alliance around us. And we broke in, and by the second time we were at the Felton, we had sold the Felton out to where there was nothing but standing room. We're talking well over 1,500 people. So he took an even bigger chance, and he moved to the Blue Horizon. And if anyone knows the Blue Horizon is a legendary boxing venue. And no wrestling company ever, ever did well at the Blue Horizon. And I'll tell you one thing about Izzy Avilas, if he couldn't do anything, he could promote. He could talk a cat off of a fish cart. That's how good he was. And Izzy hustled and promoted, and he hustled and promoted. And sadly, that's what a lot of some of these guys nowadays are missing. They don't promote. And because some of them have gotten lazy in the social media era, they don't do hand-to-hand. They don't have their people go out to meet their fans. They don't sell the show. They think, okay, I'm going to put it on Facebook, I'm going to put it here, and hopefully we'll get 200 or 300 people, and they'll be satisfied with it. The first time in the Blue Horizon, we sat 1,400 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Second time in the Blue Horizon, we sat 1,500. And by the final time, we sat close to 2,000 in the Blue Horizon. And that time was the very first time we brought outside talent in. We brought the legendary George M. Steele.
Whoa.
And, yeah, that was – and, you know, if you want to talk about a bunch of dudes turning into 13-year-olds, you know, we're all sitting there, we're in our gear, and we're trying to – not that goofy, because, you know, you're always told, you know, don't act like a jerk around the fence, da-da-da-da. But he was a good dude. I mean, down to earth, you know, he talked to us, did magic tricks with us. I mean, he was, like, a really cool dude to be around. And, of course, it was time – and he turned it on, and all of a sudden we were like little kids again, trying not to be seen by the crowd, but we're trying to look at his match the entire time. And the minute he hit the turn, you'd have thought that the match was going in the locker room because there was a loud pop, inside of the locker room than here in the auditorium. But yeah, we did close to 2,000 people at the Blue Horizon. I mean, it was one of those things where we became a victim of our own success because we kind of, I don't want to say we went against the grain, but we didn't use a lot of the guys who were more established than Indies. He really built around us. And it's a credit to Izzy because he took guys who were really not that good and he built a good product around us. And, but of course, as time goes on, as good as you get, things happen eternally. And, there was a split and half the talent went one way, half the talent went another way. And I'd like to say that we were still moderately successful. But honestly, when things like that happen, and two groups of people go against each other, it's never good, And by the time the GWA started in 1997, by the year 2000, it was done.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, great times. I mean, I kind of set. I was the GWA television champion for about a year. We did have a TV show on the Greater Media Cable. I don't know if I'm telling my age by talking about Greater Media Cable, but yeah, it was fun. I mean, that had to be the most fun time. I mean, everything that I wanted to do in pro wrestling, limousine, the party, just crazy road stories that happened in the GWA because Avila's, he invested in us because we worked hard and we gave, we made money. I mean, it's sad that After 2000, it just kind of the scene got so diluted.
Yeah.
Everybody who thought they could be a promoter, they would rent a ring, get a license, somebody's license, get a couple straps. The minute they started selling replica belts, that was just it. Everybody was a promoter then, and you had five dudes fighting for the same 500 fans.
Yeah.
Every weekend fighting against each other, and it kind of got silly. I did my best. I made as much money as I could the entire time, tried to work everywhere I did. Even at the time that I was working, it was literally from Thursday to Sunday, you get in a car, you go from New Jersey, Delaware, New York, North Carolina, you're just up and down all over the place. That's what you're doing literally from Thursday to Sunday. And, the weekend's over, you're back to your 9 to 5 or whatever, but you still had that 3 or 4 days of the craziest adventures you could imagine. I got to meet some really cool people. During that time, I met a really young Trent Astin. God bless his soul. He was just scratching the surface of how talented he was. Just to see him at 19 having such a grasp on the sport and how to operate in the ring and having a grasp on the business. And Johnny Cash went too. Those two, those guys trained at they trained at the Animal House for Pit Bulls, which is where finished my training. God bless Anthony Durante, was another great soul that I met, in those earlier years. It kind of got to a point after 2000, I was kind of bumping around and trying to go from place to place. Making it work from weekend to weekend, and then Liberty All Star Wrestling happened, and Liberty All Star Wrestling was the brainchild of Bay Wagner, who worked for ACW for a while, and he like myself was a big fan of the old school, the NWA, in the UWF, promotions like that, and that's what he gave the fans. I mean, we may have had 200 or 300 people a show, but it was like always something good, always something exciting at those shows. Liberty was a really good time, And I got to be, I was managed for a long time by a guy named Larry Fontaine. He was another Liberty product. We went everywhere. Got to have a lot of fun. And then another guy. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, bro.
Oh, no, it's okay. I do have a caller. They did indicate they wanted to speak, so I'm going to bring them on and see what they have to add. Now, caller, you're on the line. Just state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Ozzy, and I'm from Fisherville, Pennsylvania.
All right. Do you have a question for Ron?
Two questions, actually.
Go ahead.
One's a little personal, so I'll save that for last.
Okay.
So, Ron, you mentioned GWA and all that other stuff. How was it wrestling in the 90s when wrestling was still enjoyable and appreciated?
I mean, and that's a good question. The 90s, it was a crazy fun time. Literally, I mean, I got to be on television and, you know, I met a lot of people. I got to make a lot of good friends along the way. You know, I mean, I was on Philly After Midnight with Wally Kennedy. I got to be in places I never thought, locker rooms that I never thought I would get to be in. I got to meet
nice.
And hang out with people I never thought I would get a chance to do.
We talked about accomplishments during the 90s. Now, somewhere along the line, you hooked up with Doc Diamond. Doc Diamond and how you met up with him.
Well, it's kind of funny. I was actually approached in 2007 to actually come head to the new Russell Academy. I just severed ties with a group called America Championship Wrestling, and I was still kind of raw about the feelings behind that. And one of the bookers contacted me, says, "We're opening a new school in Philadelphia. We'd like you to come, you know, come train at our school." And I'm like, you guys just heat those other guys, and I don't want to get involved with that. And I turned them down, you know. I always try to stay away from drama and pro wrestling, you know. But it so happened in 2010, and after reuniting and separating from the ACW again, I was booked to do just one show for Devastation Wrestling Federation, who at that time was partnered with Local Wrestling Academy. And Devastation Wrestling Federation was and Devastation University was founded by King Kong Bundy. And King Kong Bundy sold it to Doc Diamond in 2008.
Okay. I always did wonder how that came about, because I knew that somewhere along the line, I guess they were business partners, but now he's completely out of it.
We still recognize him as our first founder, but it's now called Doc Diamond Devastation Wrestling Federation.
Okay.
And Devastation University. And I was approached to do a match. I wrestled Sheik Shilawe, and at the time he was the Trash Talking Radio Show heavyweight champion. And Classy Mike Trash is another radio show host. I guess I shouldn't be plugging him, but he had a radio show, but he also would crown a symbolic champion of his show in various indies. So at the time, Sheik Ali was the champion. And initially, I was supposed to wrestle someone else, and Mike Trash saw me, and he said, "I'd like to have Ron wrestle Sheik." He booked me, put the title on me, and that's kind of how it became. I began. I was coming. They asked me to come back the next month. And I said, "Sure, I'll be back." So I came back. It was the summer. It was a lot of fun. You know, they had a pretty solid fan base, you know. Not a very huge show at the time. I mean, but still 250 fans is nothing to sneeze at these days. And we had a lot of fun. And somehow or the other, they were asking would I come to the school. I'm like, "Well, sure, I'll come to the school. Help out a little bit." And went to the school, went to train with a few guys, and I was then again approached to become the lead instructor of the school. And at this time, you know, I'm a little older, and I have a different view on the business now, you know. And so I said, "Sure, you know, I gladly accept the position as a trainer." And I've been there since 2010. And in fact, October 2010 is when we formed the Empire. That would be myself, Irina, who is now the DWF Heavyweight Champion and New Moon Rising United States Champion.
Yeah.
Sienna Duvall, King Black, you're the Even by the Man.com champion, and a young guy by the name of Xavier Fate. You know, I mean, the Empire first started as a huge conglomerate. It was kind of ragtag. A lot of the pieces didn't fit. And we had to do some whittling and adding and subtracting. And now we got this core group that we have now, and it's been for the last 2 years. To be honest, you know, just when people start to count us out, here we are still. You know, I have not been in the ring since July. You know, taking time out of the ring, taking time out of actual competition. You know, I've been, concentrating on training. We have a great new crop of young guys at the school, you know, and one of the standouts who really just kind of came onto the scene is that exploded out of the gate, a guy by the name of Major McClendon.
Yeah, we had him on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. Hear his Major, name a lot.
Hmm?
I said we hear his name a lot, too.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, because of his background and his training in the Marine Corps, he does not rest on his laurels. Every time he's in the ring, he gets better. Every time he wrestles, he gets better. And it's just, you know, he's one of those rare natural talents. And I mean, he's not at his peak yet, and that's the scary part. He's one of those guys that, you know, he's 25 years old and he's just hitting his stride. And in about five years, he is going to be probably one of the greatest to do this. And I'm not speaking objectively. I'm just saying, he has a willingness to learn, and he eats it up, and he constantly improves himself every time he steps in the ring. I mean, he just had a great match in October against Slim Whiskey. They had what they called a boot camp match, and it was just these guys. They gave it their all. They left it all in the ring.
They certainly did. Yeah,
I was really
proud
to see him. That match.
Now, I do have another caller.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
We swear this is not us.
Okay.
Okay, caller, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Brady Hicks from the pages of Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Brady. I knew the number was familiar. Do you have a question for Mac Daddy Ron Starr?
You know, I was going to ask him about some of the things he'd like to do outside the ring, but I guess I'll stay away from that. No, I was just wondering, Ron, I mean, you've been around a long time. What was your consummate, most awesome experience as a wrestler? Like, I'm always curious. That's something I like to ask guys.
You know, it's funny that you ask that. There's a company in Texas, Dallas, Texas, Christian Wrestling Federation. And if anyone knows me, they know that my face is no secret. You know, they know that I have a very strong belief in God. And you know, when I got approached by Christian Wrestling Federation to come fly out to Dallas, Texas, and wrestle at their facility, which they call the warehouse in Rockwall, Texas, and they have 400 to 500 fans in their warehouse on a Saturday night. These guys, they don't charge a dime. These fans, they come in and they're just, number one, they're crazy about the wrestling. And the fact that it's 500 people and they all love the Lord. And that was a huge deal for me. And I did a 3-day tour with them. And like the Sunday before I flew back home, we wrestled at a church in downtown Dallas. 3,000 kids in a church on a Sunday afternoon. Just incredible. You know, I mean, just to be able to use the talent that God gave me and, you know, got to speak to people and, you know, gave them a chance to see that there are people who do this and who still love God and, you know, who love their families. And, you know, that was a great experience for me. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some other stories that I probably can't remember from my earlier days and probably shouldn't remember. But, you know, that was probably one of the single greatest experiences of my life, you know, in pro wrestling.
That's really interesting. Dean, can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. That's really interesting. But when you're talking about crowds like that, like 3,000 or even like 500 people, I mean, you guys didn't have, like, WWE security out there. Was there ever any point when you didn't really feel safe in the ring, when the crowd got a little rowdy or whatever, especially back then?
Well, I had to be escorted from the building in the south one time. I stole a page from the book of Jerry Lawler. And if you haven't been cut on by Jerry Lawler, you haven't been cut on in his business. And the lines that I used, there was a couple in the front row. And I asked the guy, was that his wife? And she sure is, buddy. And I said, well, if you guys break up, is she still your sister? And the crowd went and they went nuts. Trash, bottles, and I had to be walked out of the building. It was insane. Yeah, that was probably the scariest time.
Stealing that line.
But we did not have, even at the Horizon when we had 2,000 people, we had security. I mean, we didn't have security to contain 2,500 people. You know, but you know, the people were there for the wrestling. I didn't feel like at any time I wasn't safe. You know, I mean, it was a good time. You know, and I know it's so funny how much the world's changed in the last 11 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, it was just like, man, I'm out here, I got these fans, and I'm rocking and rolling. You know what I mean? It was just always a good experience being out in the ring. Nothing bad. I can't recall a time other than what I just told you where I really feared for my life in the ring.
I do have another question. One of the people you did train is probably at this point the biggest face in the CZW, and that's Matt Tremont. When he first came in, did you see something in him that he would become what he has?
Matt Tremont had this indefinable thing when I met him. He just had all his heart, and it was something about the way he moved in the ring. When I first laid eyes on him, and I said, you know what, I want to work with you a little bit. And, you know, and it kind of led to us having an in-the-ring feud. You know, I mean, me and him, we tore the old Dennis University down quite a few times. I think between him and the feud I had with Ivy Green, I mean, this last year, these last 2 years were really a lot of fun. But I'm really proud of Matt. He's leaving to go to Germany tomorrow. And I think it's his second international tour. I'm just really proud of what he's accomplished, you know. And actually, I'm letting the cat out of the bag, but Matt Tremont is going to be in the house on November 24th.
No
at Winners in Turkey.
Yeah, okay. And another thing, I just wanted to know what your current role is now at the DWF Loco Academy.
Well, I'm the lead trainer. I mean, we have a lot of veterans that come in. I have a backstage role. I am involved very much with the creative process in DWF Loco Pro Wrestling. I haven't been in the ring since July, and when it's time for me to get back in the ring. If it ever becomes time for me to get back in the ring, I'm going to give it 100% again. I mean, I'm at this point right now. I don't know if this is it for me. You know, I don't feel like it's it for me. You know, but, you know, sometimes you lose the desire to perform. And, you know, but, you know, you never completely lose it. I mean, I've been at this 18, 19 years now. I don't see myself just, you know, giving it up now. You know, it's just, you know, it's just fun. I mean, it's what I love to do, you know. I mean, I can't do it all over again. I would have just taken a chance at 18 and gone to Memphis and just try to break him down there. There's so many things I would have done over. This is exactly what I would have wanted to do. There's no mistake about it. There's no question about it. I would have probably left high school and the day after I'd have been on a plane to Memphis trying to break in and working down there. I've always been told that I'm 20 years too late in the business because of, you know, I always idolize and tried to emulate those guys from back in the day, Reggie B. Fine,
Butch House put out Iceman Tim Parsons. I was a huge Junkyard Dog fan. Butch Reed, Ron Simmons, Tony Atlas, Rocky Johnson, Bobo Brazil. Those are the guys that I looked up to. I mean, and even, you know, my absolute idol, the guy that inspired me to want to be a pro wrestler was SD Jones. You know, I just loved watching him every week. I mean, you know fully well what was in the cards for him, but I just loved to, he always had a smile. Always loved the enthusiasm he gave when he was in the ring. So, you know, yeah, if I had to go all over again, I probably would have broken in at 18 years old like some of these younger guys. I mean, some of these guys are getting opportunities I can only dream of. And, you know, guys like Black G's, you know, two or three tours in Japan, tours all over Europe. You know, I mean, that dude is, and I remember when he broke in at 12 years ago. Little tiny thing. I said, oh,
yeah.
Put on some weight and, you know, look at him now.
That's for sure. Now, I was just wondering also, because you answered my next question, but also behind the scenes, you're in a creative role at this point, or?
You could define it as a creative role.
Okay.
Not very creative.
not very creative.
Okay. Where can the people follow you, follow Ty Reno, follow the Empire, really?
Well, on Facebook, we have 205 Empire on Facebook. You can also follow me at MacDaddyRonStar on Facebook or at 215 Empire on Twitter, Real Ty Reno at Twitter, 215 Blackie at Twitter, 215 Sienna Duvall at Twitter, and 215 Xavier Fate on Twitter.
Okay. And, Brady, do you have anything else for Ron, or?
No.
No, absolutely not, man. I'm just, you know, I just love sitting under this learning tree and listening to all this. It's awesome.
It certainly is. Ron, I do want to thank you. Like I said, I'll privately message you the information I do have.
Absolutely.
And we'll take care of the rest, but thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I do apologize for how things went tonight, but
yeah, sincerely, seriously, yeah. I don't know what happened. We really do apologize about that.
Oh, that's fine, and I do appreciate this, you know, having me on. And anytime you want me, I'll be back, and we'll be glad to.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, we're definitely going to get more involved, shall we say? Because one thing we didn't touch on, there's something going on with New Moon Rising Wrestling and DWF, it seems.
Well, you know, I've known Jake Bishop probably pretty much my entire wrestling career, and we're the kind of, you know, we kind of came up the same way, and he trained at the Monster Factory, and we've known each other, and we, you know, we kind of traveled in parallel circles, and this is the first time we've actively been involved in a company at the same time, or actually more than one company. Jake came in, he challenged Ty the last show, and y'all saw how that happened. But now, it's a little different now because now Ty's the New Moon Rising United States champion.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot more at stake than, you know, it seems. And the Meat Society has an extra grind, and they'll be back on the 24th to, you know, try to prove their point at Wonders and Turkeys at the Sportsplex, 1331 O'Reilly Drive, East of OPA. You know, it's going to be a great show, especially the main event. I mean, I can't even believe this match is going to happen. And Mark Angel, you know, he's a guy who's really, you know, come up scrappy, come up tough, and he's finally gotten a chance. He's down to the DWF local junior heavyweight champion, and he's facing his former tag team partner, former best friend, in a match that he called for, table letters and chairs match, but it's more stakes than just the title. Mark even went so much to put his career on the line. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if I would have done that if I was him. You know, I mean, that's a lot. You know, you're talking about your livelihood. You're talking about how you eat. And, you know, sometimes you don't want to put your livelihood into the hands of other men because you never know what will happen.
That's for sure. And that's November 24th at the Sportsplex in Feasterville.
1331 O'Reilly Drive, Feasterville.
That's right. I'm excited about that. I'll be there calling the action.
Absolutely. Phenomenal job calling the action last show.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm really excited about the direction we're taking with DWF Loco. And I think this is going to be, you know, this is going to be another great show. I mean, we had him on his feet the entire time last show, and I intend to have him on his feet the entire time this time, too. You know, this is a great facility, great building. The people around in the neighborhood are just awesome, you know. It's good to have a fresh start and, you know, fresh eyes, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, and that's probably the best way to put it. Since the move to the Sportsplex, it really does seem that a lot of it's a whole different feel. Johnny Hated went into it last week. You're going into it now. But just describe that new feeling that DWF has now that they have really their own home at this point.
Exactly. I mean, it's better to have your own home than to be someplace where you're not wanted. You know, I mean, and you can always feel the vibe when you're not wanted someplace. I mean, when we moved here, we were welcomed with open arms. And, the kids and, you know, that come in and out of that place constantly, they're excited. The kids that came to the show on the 13th were excited. And, you know, it's just, I'm glad to be able to be a part of putting on entertainment that they can follow. You know, and I love giving them heroes and villains every month. And, you know, it's a great feeling to see fans who are excited about wrestling and, you know, sometimes trying to play for a smart crowd just irks you because, you know, you can never impress them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you've got a crowd that's genuinely willing to buy it and they buy it every time, you give them something to hold on to, you give them a story to hold on to, you give them characters that they can relate to. They will come back constantly. And I believe that's what we have here at the Sportsplex.
All right. So, again, Ron, thank you for coming on. We're going to talk again.
Absolutely. In fact, you should hit me up as soon as you can.
Yes, definitely. So, you have a great night, sir.
You too, brother. Take care. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay. So that was Mac Daddy Ron Starr joining us in quite the interview. We are going to be at the Richboro soccer tournament, and that's in Richboro, Pennsylvania. Now, Richboro Middle School, the soccer field. So that is going to be...
Wait, what are you guys doing? Seriously.
We're going to be there at a vendor table. We're going to be promoting New Moon Rising Wrestling, selling some shirts and... photo ops, and I'm sure Brady
photo
and I.
Ops.
That's right. That's what we're doing.
I want a picture with Brady.
You know what? Kids surrounded Brady at intermission.
Well, you know, he's like a cute fat clown.
You know, if he could hear you, he'd be.
If he could hear me, he'd be mad at me, and then he'd get over it.
Anyway, Omega, this week there was the retirement of Stephen Bonner, probably. One half of the reason why the UFC took off the way it did, of course, I'm talking about the Ultimate Fighter finale, season one, where he and Forrest Griffin had a fight that was watched by such and such an amount of people. It's the number one fight of all time, a lot of people say. Most viewers ever on Spike TV. Stephen Bonner has retired after his loss to Anderson Silva. So how do you think the sport will remember him?
Well, you know, he's always going to be remembered for the Forrest fight. He's always going to be remembered to be, as you said, one half of probably the most important fight in MMA history. This is a guy who's only lost to, with one exception, has really only lost to champions and former champions. I think you're going to look back on his career and say he was a good fighter, never a great fighter. But I think he's done a lot for sport. He certainly has a great personality. I think he's probably going to go on to some kind of commentating role, whether that's going to be with UFC or just some other MMA show on some other channel. I don't know, but I think you know he's had set himself up with a good career, and I think he'll be remembered for his contribution to MMA. Whether I'm UFC Hall of Famer, probably not, but I think for what he did for the sport to kick start it off, along with Forrest Griffin, I think he'll always be remembered for that.
Now, like I said, that fight, most viewers ever on broadcast television for an MMA fight, put the sport on the map. What do you think? I mean, was that fight as good as everyone says? I mean, I've seen it. I personally think Dan Henderson, check that one off. And had the best fight ever. But that's just my opinion. But how do you feel? I mean, is that fight as good as everyone says?
I think it was I thought it was a great fight. I mean, those guys just banged for three rounds.
Whoa.
Yes, Dan. but they stood out and traded, and it was bloody. It was action packed. It was exactly what the sport needed at exactly the right time. You know, I'm sure if you held it up against some other fights, there's more spectacular. Obviously, that went to decision. There's been knockouts, more spectacular knockouts. There's been faster paced fights. I think overall, if you're looking for one match to say that you really do have to watch it, then yeah, that match is probably it, because it did put the sport on the map, and it's not a boring fight, and if by any stretch, it's an entertaining fight. You know, it's all perspective, it's all opinion as to whether or not, and what your criteria you're using to measure it, as to whether or not it's the best fight ever. I'm not going to say it's the best fight ever. I think it's the most important fight ever.
There you go. I'm glad you put it that way. I'm a little off my game, Omega. I'm sorry. I really want to talk about this.
Yeah.
But
I've sensed that since I've come on the show that things have just kind of gone awry.
It's purely coincidental.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's good. I guess that's good. I'm not feeling it either, guys. But I'm just exhausted with that.
Oh, I know. There's a lot that can be said right now that we're not.
Yeah, I understand.
There was a pay-per-view.
What pay-per-view? Hell in a Cell? Nobody cares. The whole thing ended with a referee. We had this whole big build-up. Everybody's talking about Ryback's getting a push. Low blow, end of the match. What a waste of $45. There's the end of your show. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
Well, they did find a way to make it so that Punk got to keep his title.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you said.
I was hoping they wouldn't go cheap with it.
But I just don't know where they're going with it. I mean,
it's a waste of time. Sorry. Yeah. I'm trying not to make it worse for you editing-wise. It's a waste of time. Waste of time. You and I could book our way into a ratings super cruise thing.
Is anybody else other than me just kind of thinking that they're just putting this in a holding pattern until the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is. They're holding it on one person, Rock versus Punk championship. And if they give Rock the championship, even though I'd like to see it, that's pointless.
Let me get your guys' opinion on this, because I haven't been thinking about this.
Ever the professional.
Yeah. Big Show winning the title from Sheamus.
Not a fan. No.
No?
A Big Show, at this point in time, no.
No? I can understand that.
Not at this point in his career.
Well, I think he's fine as a transitional champion.
Well, who are they transitioning to?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, Ziegler, hopefully. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know.
Dan, any thoughts?
Ask me one more time.
he wasn't paying attention.
No,
I don't care is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I
was just I'm trying to fill the time, trying to end on a good note. That's
I don't see a point. Okay, I don't see a point. I don't see a point on two titles in the first place. Right off the bat, I think.
Oh, at this point, you mean two titles, you know, the World Heavyweight and the WWE.
Yeah, exactly. Right. To me, it just offset each other and knocked down the importance. We were talking all night, to get back on track. You want me back on track here? We're talking all night about Papa Dunn, a guy who's working his butt off. I'm sorry, Dean.
It's fine.
A guy who's working his butt off, who can outwork, in my opinion, and outtalk anybody in the business right now. Maybe not Punk. Maybe Punk and him are on the same level verbally. I personally think Papa Don could outwork him. Getting a shot at the championship, in my opinion. In my opinion, the WWE might as well be at the bottom of a Cracker Jack box.
I don't even know what that means. But go ahead.
Meaning it's a crappy prize, and you work real hard to get it, and when you get it, it's like, whatever.
Oh. Thank you.
No problem. That makes sense, right?
No, it does. It does. It's not like poop on Velcro.
No. I was so well. No, it's just that we're talking all night about that man going after a prestigious championship. I mean, we go back to Shurik Schmidt, Barry Gagne, Flair, Buddy Rogers, Flair, Harley Race, Ronnie Garvin, I guess, if you like Stone Hands. All these guys that have had this title and the history on this title, we go from that talking about a match ending with a low blow and a kick. It's.
I'm good. I have. You can follow Jake Bishop at XDog, and that's two G's, JB. NWA Dog, you can follow at NWA Dog, and that's DAWG. Steve Carino's at Steve Carino. Skipping that one. And Ron Jones, you can follow at 215 Empire. 215 Empire. Also, check out NMRWrestling.com. They have a big event coming up on November 17th. I'm appreciated there.
Yes. Also, And it will be announced by none other than yours truly, Dean Dixon, and the other guy that can't use a phone, Brady Hicks.
DoYouLiveYourDreams.com, Dan.
DoYouLiveYourDreams.com. That is a good, I guess, a great cause, and they do good things. And somebody like Carino spearheading it can only get better.
Carino, I already like the guy, but after tonight's wonderful.
Gentleman and a scholar, and not full of crap.
It doesn't matter at this point, Dan.
I'm trying to not do it on principle, sir.
Also, you can follow ROHWrestling.com and TVByDemand.com would be a couple good places for you to check out. TV By Demand, that's, of course, where you can catch up on all the DWF action. I'm not sure if they have the video of the last event up, but you can check out July's in its entirety. And I did the call there as well. There was like a 15-man booth that night at one point. It was amazing.
15 and a half.
Well, it was so funny. At one point, it was me, Ryan, Salamander Jones, David Adams, John Solo. Loudy was there at one point. So a 6-man booth.
Loudy, yeah. I could talk to you all day.
Loudy, I wish he got more credit.
Yeah.
For his smarts, for his
bubbles.
His bubbles, quite frankly. I mean, come on. his bubbles. At the DWF show, I just saw all these bubbles, and they got smoke machines. Never mind, I'm not going into the story. But speaking of Loudy, he will be on in 2 weeks. Next week, we're taking off. Strange how these things happen. We got a bye week. Unless something happens, Dan's working on. But
wait, what?
Unless you're working on, so we're taking off next week. That was
no. We have a big announcement coming soon. I don't know how you want to handle it, but it's about a legend in the sport, a literal legend in the sport, and we will have a firm date on that soon.
For those who are listening,
no BS.
There are hints scattered throughout this episode. So
yes, there's about three
hints scattered throughout this episode of this person who's going to be on the show soon. Woo! Not that guy.
We have that as well. But
don't
right now, you know what, Dan, let's schedule it for. I don't want to do anything next week. I don't want to worry about this show. I don't want to worry about
crap this next week. I don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah, let's
just. We're off.
But yeah.
You're preaching to the choir. You got my vote.
Okay, very good. So we'll return on the 14th, and Foxy Foxy will also be here.
Oh, that I'm looking forward to. Can we talk dork stuff?
Sure, it's Foxy Foxy. It's Nerd Herders. So, but we're going to talk about her role in the business. She's, of course, part of the Nerd Herders podcast that we support here at Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. And
Friday nights at 9, Dream Elite.
Yeah, blogtalkradio.com/
Good people, sirs.
Dream Elite. Of course, she's also the husband of Damian Dragon, our guest last week, who is apparently a Mormon.
Is he? Wait, they're married?
You didn't.
Son of a bitch! My chances!
Yeah. Yeah, the chances. So, you know what? Why aren't you just like John from Rhode Island and send her gifts? And
no, I'm kidding. I knew they were married.
Sing to her and
playing a character.
Do you have anything, Omega? As we close out this quite the memorable episode.
Omega roll out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not much going on in MMA right now. I guess there's one event on this weekend on the former versus or NBC Sports Network called the World Series of Fighting. Andre Arlovski, Anthony Rumble Johnson, Miguel Torres are both all fighting on that card. I'm going to check it out. We'll see. Maybe I'll report back next week. So, yeah, it is.
What channel is that on? I'm sorry.
It's on NBC Sports Network.
NBC.
Or whatever Versus used to be.
Yeah, NBC. Oh, okay. Cool. What time is that and what day?
It's on Saturday. I believe it's 7:30 Pacific time. So that would be what, 10:30?
Looks like I have something to do on Saturday now. Thank you, Omega, for passing that along. I will.
That'll never make air.
I will. I will be watching that from the comfort
for
of my
Double
house.
D, you can find him at Folsom County.
Yeah, and for Dan Law 83.
And for Omega Squad, you can find him at Omega Squad, our original.
It's like a Christmas gift. It starts out so well, you unwrap it, and it's filled with
Now have a good find week. That to edit. Have fun.
Have a good week. Or two.
I've got another confession.